I trust Atlas Butler because they've been a local company for over 100 years. Not that you should trust everyone just because they're local. Atlas Butler, yes. Guy who sells watches out of his car, maybe not.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
One Columbus.
Good morning, I'm Eric Reeser. Ohio State remains the number one team in the college football playoff rankings. The committee released their third top 25 in bracket projection last night. Indiana is 2, followed by Texas A&M at 3. Georgia is 4th. There are 2 more playoff reveals before the final bracket comes out on December 7th. On the field last night, Ohio University ran all over UMass 42-14. Bobcats stay one game back of Western Michigan in MAC play. The Broncos beat Northern Illinois 35-19. Akron got past Bowling Green 19-16. The Falcons fall to 1-6 in conference play. In the NFL, Ja'Marr Chase had his suspension upheld for spitting on Steelers quarter Jalen Ramsey. Chase will miss Cincinnati's game this Sunday against New England. And on the ice last night in Winnipeg, the Jets bombed the Blue Jackets 5-2. This update sponsored by the Waterworks and Header Plumbing, Drain, Heating, and Cooling, together to serve you better. Schedule today at thewaterworks.com.
Your morning just got more interesting.
Distilled and barrel-picked for your listening pleasure.
Bo Bishop,
a local sports media legend.
What William T. Sherman was to the Union Army, he is to Northern College football.
A husband, a father, and middling youth sports coach.
He's friends with Central Ohio sporting royalty.
I'm talking to Ohio State Athletic Director Ross Bjorken. Coach Day walking on with us right now. Good to see you, buddy.
Good buddy, Austin Ward.
My good buddy, Tim May, the Tim May Show.
The great Doug Lamery is joining us.
Hi, everybody. Dom Tiberi here.
Oh, Reese came in, and he's handed me papers.
Yeah,
and then, he said, you see that button? That's the only button you need to worry about. Don't touch. There's 8,000 buttons in front of me. Oh, I didn't know what he was talking about.
The one that says on.
We blew the budget on this imaging,
and only two guys answered our ad on Craigslist.
Ryan Baker and Eric Reeser.
Act accordingly.
You're now listening to Bishop and Friends.
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for over 75 years.
All right, let's do it live on a First Friday Miracle edition of the program. Bo and the boys with you for the next 3. Jake Trotter an hour earlier than normal, so he will join us at 9:30, and we'll get his take on the rankings that came out last night. Not much change at the top. We'll do a little higher or lower coming up at 10 o'clock. Also hit you with our weekly bracket predictions of how we think this thing is going to go based on where they are ranked and what is still ahead. It is a Hey Guys First Friday. Get your questions into the fellas at 971BFS and in the YouTube chat. Both of those places are available for that. And at 11:30, our old buddy Sam Monson will come on. His thoughts on the Browns' 2 young quarterbacks, Dylan Gabriel and Shedeur Sanders, feeling like it's trending towards Shedeur this week out in Las Vegas, making his starting NFL debut. But I did want to start here because we had the news official last night that there has been a pause in the Big Ten's play for private equity partnership with the California Trust out there. And it's something we've talked about a lot over the last couple of weeks. And I don't want to bore you with the details of the whys and the nots and so forth. And we've talked about it ad nauseum. But I do think there is one thing that the Big Ten that has happened to this conference over the years that is now coming back to bite them a little bit. If you think about everything that the Big Ten was all about for the longest time, I mean, hell, it's in the name. They were the first to be called the Big Something. Why did they want to be called the Big Ten? Well, because these were massive universities in, for the most part, massive cities, state capitals, land-grant universities in the part of the country that is the engine of the country. If you think about the Big Ten in its infancy, that's what it represented. There was a chestiness, a big brawny chestiness to it, and these universities reflected that. And they had, in many instances, very similar, like-minded views on things. It was truly a conference of teams that all rode in the same direction. And then things started to change a little bit. But in the beginning, it wasn't that different. I mean, the addition of Penn State makes sense. Pennsylvania's further east, obviously, than the Big Ten had previously been, but Penn State felt kind of like a Big Ten school. I don't know if it did to folks in Happy Valley. I think they probably fancied themselves more of an East Coast school. And there are probably folks over there at that time that would have rather, if they had to join a conference, join the ACC, that maybe that made a little bit more sense for them. But from our perspective, from the Big Ten's perspective, Penn State made a lot of sense. And then they added Nebraska. And at the time they added Nebraska, Nebraska made some sense. Not as much sense as Penn State. And I was here doing it at the time, doing these shows and here at Channel 10 and here in town. And I remember thinking, yeah, I get it. Like, there's a dance partner with Iowa and it's a football brand, and I kind of get it. But at the same time, like, that was going to be a little bit of an outpost with Nebraska. So then you fast forward a couple more years and they had Rutgers in Maryland. Well, what was that about? It was about big markets. That was about Washington, D.C. and Baltimore and New York City. And that was about cable buy. And Jim Delaney would come on and he would tell you that if we can charge instead of a nickel or a penny per subscriber for cable buy in these markets, if we can charge 10 cents per subscriber in these cable markets, well, by God, we'd make a lot of money. And boy, did they. But this is one that I was the right side of history on. It was never about markets. It was always about football brands. So they went backwards with that one. That's probably the first one that you went, oh, you blew it, boy. There was an opportunity to get big in a different way, and they went for the immediate cash grab. They went for the cable buy cash grab. Cable buy doesn't even exist anymore. It's extinct. Okay, it's done. So that's the first one that you go, got a little bit too big too quick. Then what do? You had UCLA and USC. And what was that a reaction to? The SEC adding Texas and Oklahoma and panic. And what did you see in USC and UCLA? You saw Los Angeles. You saw Los Angeles and you saw the USC brand. And there was no thought to what any of it would mean big picture for everybody else in the league. And you got a big time zone. You got the Pacific time zone, and that was critical. We thought it was going to be critical for the fourth window. It hasn't been yet in terms of the television, the television schedule. Then they added Washington and Oregon. And now you have a big geographical problem. You now have something that's starting to make no sense. You now have something that probably should have been a football scheduling agreement or arrangement, or dare I say, alignment. Instead, you turned it into a conference because you panicked because the SEC got Texas and Oklahoma. Now, you got them at discount, which is ridiculous because they both done more than hold up their end of the bargain. But now all of a sudden you have a big geographical problem. Now you go big private equity. Well, why does this not go through? Because how can you possibly get schools that range from Piscataway, New Jersey, to Los Angeles, to Eugene, to Columbus, to Ann Arbor, to State College, to Lincoln, to Minneapolis, St. Paul? How can you possibly get them all to align? How? What do they have in common? What do those institutions have in common? And it's not just that. Now they're talking about a big playoff. Do the constituencies in this town want a 24-team playoff? A 28-team playoff? But the Big Ten wants it. Why does it want it? Because it's trying to chase big money, and it's trying to make sense of the conference that got too damn big over the course of the last 15 years. It got too big. There is very little alignment. They can't possibly think the same. Look at their television package. On the surface, it looks great. It's a big television package. You're on three networks, right? In three different windows. That feels like the NFL. That feels pretty damn big. But what's the reality of the television package? Because you got so big and because you added dead weight, you don't have enough good television shows. And so what do you get? You get your beloved Ohio State Buckeyes as 33.5-point favorites in the, quote, big noon game of the week against Rutgers. There was a time when this conference had a sweet spot. But for all of Jim Delaney's good, and the Big Ten Network, no question, was a beneficial thing, and we've all gotten big wealthy because of a lot of it, because of the cable, because of Big Ten Network, because of what he did from a television partnership standpoint, everybody's gotten big time rich, or they should have, or else they're mismanaged. But the sustainability was not considered. And nobody stopped and said, does any of this make sense? So am I surprised that the private equity deal went kaplooey and ended up being a big disaster, at least for now? No. What do we have in common with UCLA? We just played them. A history of playing in the Rose Bowl?
That's it. There's the one thing you wanted to do at the end of the season in the 60s, 70s, 80s, yeah. 90s, and parts of the 2000s was, hey, you can play in the Rose Bowl at the end of the year. Boy, wouldn't that be great. You can see a Pac-12 team or Pac-10 team.
Yeah.
That's where the similarities stop. And that's what concerned me so much about this private capital, private investment thing, mm-hmm. was that you were tied to universities like UCLA that historically have just made terrible decisions in regards to their athletic department, not only the 2036, but 2046. And the conference has just become, like you said, too bloated because you're from coast to coast and you're schools that historically have made zero sense to be in the same conference as each
no
other.
Sense.
And you've done it at times to cover up for mistakes.
No doubt.
And you've made bigger mistakes along the way in ignoring Oklahoma and Texas and getting Rutgers and Maryland and then trying to get Nebraska. And in your pursuit of one of the Pacific schools, you ended up with four of them. It's like going to Target and saying, oh, I just need one thing, coming out with mm-hmm. six of them. You really only needed Oregon. But somehow you came out with Washington, UCLA, and USC. And that doesn't help anybody. Really, not right now. Because some of those schools aren't even getting the full freight. But Purdue is.
It was so reactionary.
Yeah.
Yeah, right, Purdue. It was so reactionary. It was reactionary to SEC in Oklahoma. Or Texas and Oklahoma, it was reactionary to a cable buy, an antiquated system of, I'm like the only guy in America still has cable boxes. Yeah. Like, that's what it was about. Like, to not have the foresight to understand that if you could, and honestly, if you could have one decision back, that's probably it. It's probably Rutgers and Maryland.
Yes. That's the biggest oopsie-daisy.
That changed it. That forever changed the conference because you were having to cover up for that with your the moves that followed.
And even with the Big Ten Network, because that thing was ahead of its time.
Mm-hmm.
You can't accuse college leaders of universities or leaders of athletic departments for having foresight. You can accuse them of being reactionary and you can accuse them, rightfully so, I think, of doing something that only protects them in the immediate.
That's college athletics.
And not looking out for 5-10 years down the line mm-hmm. because the administrators and decision makers won't have much to say or do 10 years down the line.
It's all interesting because the Big Ten has been so loyal to their brands, right? In some ways, but
mm-hmm.
Minnesota's not what Minnesota was when the Big Ten started.
No.
Things are different, right? Illinois, Northwestern, those schools aren't what they were back when the Big Ten started. And in some ways, I would say it's not, I don't know, maybe it's the Big Ten's fault, maybe it's not, but football has shifted more towards warmer climates in some instances.
Population change, for sure.
And we've talked about the SEC, and while the SEC at the top may not be better than the Big Ten, I think the depth-wise, it probably is. And they've done a better job of marketing than it is, and that these games matter, as you've talked about, 330 CBS for years. These were mm-hmm. the games that mattered. So those brands have been built up a little bit. It's very interesting, and I don't know what they can do outside of... I don't know what any of... We talked about it yesterday. I think the answer to all of this is football and college athletics has to break off mm-hmm. and become its own thing and be different, and then we can have the conferences for everything else.
Yeah, there needs to be true leadership and foresight and a visionary. I don't know if Tony Petitti is that. I don't.
He'll try to make you money, at least.
Oh, you're going to make your money. You're going to make your money, but you're going to be chasing your tail, I think, a lot over the next decade plus. All right, coming up next, Ryan Day with some updates from the injury front with his two receivers, and we've got a victory bell ringer. I think they got it wrong. I'll explain coming up next. We're off and running on a First Friday. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
We have so many local shows, I can't fit them in a 10-second promo. So let's just say we're live and local all damn day. The Fan.
Matty Ice here.
I trust Atlas Butler because they've been a local company for over 100 years. Not that you should trust everyone just because they're local. Atlas Butler, yes. Guy who sells watches out of his car, maybe not.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Morning Juice is now live on YouTube. Join Bobby Carpenter and Jeff Thedoff weekday mornings from 6 to 8.
Just search 971 The Fan to catch the live experience or watch on demand.
The Fan.
You can stream the game.
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
And weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
A nice mix of sun and clouds as we go into the day on Wednesday, and temperatures a little bit milder as we do get up into the low 50s this afternoon. Mostly cloudy tonight with lows in the 40s, and then for Thursday we'll see more clouds but also warmth as daytime highs top out in the mid to low 50s. For The Fan, I'm meteorologist Meredith Garfalo with the 10 Weather Impact Forecast.
Starting Monday, it's Rivalry Week. We call it that because the Buckeyes play a very annoying team from Michigan.
Clever. Sponsored by your Central Ohio Toyota dealers.
The Fan. What's up?
What's up, man? What's up with you?
Sponsored by Newman Roofing. For all your roofing, gutter, or siding needs, call Newman Roofing today at 614-NEW-ROOF or visit online at newmanroofing.com.
All right, here's what's up on a First Friday Miracle edition of the program. This ties into what we talked about yet in the previous segment about how big this got. This is Ohio State's Senior Day game because the game in Ann Arbor is in Ann Arbor. And so because of that, you're going to get Rutgers. And because there isn't much else on the Big Ten slate that's very appealing, this is now a big noon game. So you're going to get the pomp and circumstance that comes with that. You are also going to get Jim Tressel ringing the bell. And I think this is a mistake. In a very big way. And here's why. You do not waste Jim Tressel on this one. Jim Tressel should ring the bell for the first time next season against Michigan. You save him for that. You do not. This is what happens, though, when you have the celebrity bell ringer thing. You start to run through them. And all of a sudden, it's like, who's going to, now we got to do this eight times next year. We got to find eight more guys to ring bells. Tress against Rutgers? I would imagine he's got the biggest pop of anybody, or as big as Arch, as big as Urban. It's as big a pop as anybody, and you're going to waste it on Rutgers, man.
I thought about that. Like, the last two have been Urban and Jerry Lucas, I believe. Yeah. And I started to think about this at the Urban, and I understand they're trying to make this a thing, right? And they want it to get off the ground, and they want it to be something that they can do moving forward. But you can't waste all your heavy hitters in the first season.
You need more bullets.
They've used all the heavy hitters so far. I mean, they've got a bunch. Now, I think the only... I mean, you could still... Jack Nicholas.
That's who I was
John Glenn, you know, Neil Armstrong. There's still people out there, but my goodness, they've gone heavy really fast.
Because Neil Armstrong, how old's Neil Armstrong?
I don't know.
I mean, he's an icon, but I mean, how old's old Neil?
It's tough because that's a long way to go up those stairs. Like last week, I think it was Jake and some of the players rang in honor of Jerry Lucas because that's a tall task to ask somebody who's not the most mobile anymore, but I wondered, because Katie Smith's available, and I think she should absolutely ring the bell, but you did basketball last week, so I was thinking, all right, what else is coming up? Well, the 50th anniversary of the Memorial Tournament's coming up. Well, you have the Golden Bear available in honor of him, if he can't, yeah, you know, go ring the bell himself, then I think that's probably the best way to go with this, because every week I do think it should be a different part of Ohio State athletic excellence that they should want to recognize.
Neil Armstrong's been dead since 2012. So, Bake, we're a little off on that one, buddy.
Okay. Well, yeah. I said John Glenn, too, and I'm like, wait a second, John Glenn's dead. But look,
yeah.
There's a lot
legends,
of people
legends,
here.
Legends, icons. Yeah, there's a lot of great ones. But I just don't think you can run out. I wouldn't waste stress on this one. He's of the people who haven't done it, isn't he number one?
Jim Tressel? Yes.
Yes. I think Tress is number one.
I think
of the folks who haven't done it, he's the one.
We're walking towards this being a sponsored element, if it's not already. Probably. So I wonder maybe in 5 years if we're doing holograms, then you can do the Neil Armstrong thing and John Glenn. And just a hologram can ring the bell.
AI version.
Well, sure. You need the visual.
Yeah. The I would not have wasted Tress on this one. I think there's more than that. Now, Ryan's not going to like that. And I heard his comments about Rutgers. And I think it was Bill Rabinowitz asked him if he'd been challenged a little bit. Or do you wish you could have been challenged a little bit more? And he goes, I understand the question. Do we have that clip? Is that the Rutgers one need to be on their game one?
You know, they always put pressure on you in all three phases. It starts with special teams and then goes to offense and defense. And, you know, they always have a plan of how they want to attack you. And they play complementary football. So, you know, coming off of a win and a bye week, so we've got to be on our game.
Yeah, his big thesis yesterday was this extent of this team hasn't played in Indianapolis. This team hasn't done things that we want to do. And so it's about us, handle our business, on to the next. That's where he's at, is that. And he can't help the schedule. We did that on Monday. It's not their fault, the Will Hunting thing. It's not their fault that this is the schedule. It is what it is. And they're close to accomplishing really all their goals. This is a unique season, and that the goals that we all kind of outlined as most important all happen at the end. I mean, it's next week in Ann Arbor. It's the following week in Indianapolis. Like, those are the two things that every single one of us thought, do these things and you have success. Handle your business in these two entities, and then that's a successful season, regardless of what happens in the playoff. That's it. So it's been a weird year in that sense. Now, we did have an update on the injuries as well. Here was Ryan on Carnell and Jeremiah.
They're in great spirits. You know, the medical staff is working hard. We'll, you know, take it day to day and see how they come in each day, but they're working hard to get back on the field, and we check in every day. We take the advice of the medical staff and use their feedback, and we go from there. So we'll continue to do that.
Pretty vague. I think most of us would kind of have a feeling like if they're not 95% or better, then we're good. I'm going to tell you right now, if this thing stays 33.5, I am not taking Ohio State Friday to cover. I'm just telling you right now, I don't think this is that type of game. I think this is get up 28 and chill zone is the way I kind of read this one. That's my read of it right now. Get to Ann Arbor healthy. That's really what it's going to be all about. So I think this one's going to have kind of a different vibe to it for sure than even the ones we've seen previously. And they've only not covered twice this year. Was it Purdue and
OU?
OU, that's it. So, yeah, my hunch is that this will be get up four scores, put it in the garage, and we'll see you next week. That's my hunch on how this thing goes on Saturday.
And that's exactly how it needs to be.
Yeah, it's fine now. I mean, we're here now.
Yeah, because this is something we've said, and this is something I think we'll continue to say until really Saturday night, that this is just a game where you're playing you.
Yeah.
Next week, you are not playing you if you're Ohio State. You're of the demons that this program's needed to exercise. This might be the largest that comes your way on the 29th. I think of Clemson. I think of the SEC.
Yeah, I
think of program demons that you just have to get rid of. The streak against the team up north, and what comes next Saturday is it.
I think it's a Ryan demon.
Yeah.
Really? I mean, I think
none of these players have experienced it either.
No. Yeah, it's him, and it's this era where they just beat at the brakes off of everybody, and then there's this. I mean, that's so. Yeah, I would not want to be him next week. I think it's a tough week. I mean, I'm sure he wants no part of any of it, and he wants it so badly, so desperately. And the funny thing is there's no real blueprint to this. Like, you can't explain how some of this stuff happens. You can't. You can say, well, he didn't talk about it enough, or he talked about it too much, or this or that. And for whatever reason, and these things happen in rivalries, they've just had your number. And you made the point earlier this week, Reese, and I think it was on point, that even in the game last week against UCLA, they're seeing maize and blue. And I think that's champions grade. I think that's ripping Julian. I think it's all those things. Like everything they're doing is that good enough to beat Michigan? And the crazy thing is very similarly to last year, this is not some supernova Michigan team. It's not. But when they play Scarlet and Gray in this era, since Spygate, they've turned into Superman for whatever reason. And they had two teams that were great, really great teams. And they had two that weren't. And they still elevate when this game happens. And I'm sure that's top of mind constantly. So if you're looking for fireworks and excitement on Saturday, I don't think you're going to get it. I think you're going to win surest way and put the hay in the barn and go looking for dinner. I don't think you're going to see a lot of flash out of this Buckeye team on Saturday at noon. Go ahead quickly.
This Rutgers team stinks. There's no reason you can't line up and run the ball.
Well, they're terrible against the run, too.
60 times. One of the worst run defenses in the country.
Yeah.
Get two touchdowns for Bo Jackson, a touchdown for James Peoples. Get every single running back you can out there. And make this a two-hour game.
Yeah.
And any seniors that don't ever play, get them in. Let them have a day.
Reward them.
Yeah.
Hand the ball to a tight end for why not?
Yeah. Jake Trotter in 2 minutes. Bishop and Friends right here.
I trust Atlas Butler because they've been a local company for over 100 years. Not that you should trust everyone just because they're local. Atlas Butler, yes. Guy who sells watches out of his car, maybe not.
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for over 75 years. The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
Let me introduce you to a man with a magnificent salt and pepper beard. A man who's currently roasting lamb on a spit. A man who runs the Rocky River Greek Festival. That man is Jake Trotter.
Sponsored by High Bank Distillery Co. Visit their Grandview, Gahanna, and Westerville locations to experience the best in craft dining and distilling. Learn more at highbankco.com.
Hi, buddy. One of the themes that I tackled at the start of the show was that the Big Ten got a little bit too big. The alignment is not there. There are universities that don't make sense with universities that have been here for a long time. And there's some bottom of this league that's having to be lifted up. And I think this led to what happened with the private equity thing kind of falling apart and being paused. It's hard to get alignment when you get this big. You were covering Oklahoma around the time when they became available. What do you remember about that? And do you think that the Sooners would have jumped at the opportunity to join the Big Ten?
Yeah. Okay. So I was covering the Browns when Texas and Oklahoma went to the SEC, but there were,
this would have been like Nebraska era, like the very first Big Ten expansion. Yeah.
What I was going to say is that, you know, it looked like back in 2010 that Oklahoma, along with Texas Tech, at one point it was A&M, then it became Oklahoma State. We're going to go to the Pac-10 mm-hmm. and create a Pac-16 along with Colorado and Utah. And that fell through at the last minute. You know, the advent of the Longhorn Network might have played a role in that, where Texas got essentially $300 million from my employer to hang around the Big 12. It was a huge payday, although, you know, the network doesn't exist anymore because Texas got folded into the SEC. To your point, like Oklahoma and Texas kind of flirted around with, you know, different realignment scenarios. There was some Big 12 expansion flirtations that happened around 2016 that never amounted to anything. But I think that Oklahoma would have gone anywhere that Texas went. So if Texas decided they wanted to go to the Big Ten, I think Oklahoma would have gone with them, assuming the invitations were there. You know, there might have been some academic obstacles, you know, back when that was a thing in conference realignment. So, yeah, I think Oklahoma definitely would have considered it. You have the Nebraska rivalry you could have revived. But I think the key thing for Oklahoma has always been staying joined at the hip with Texas because of the game, the rivalry, the opportunity to recruit in the state. You know, it's part of the identity of that program. You know, not dissimilar from the way that Ohio State and Michigan are defined by the rivalry with one another.
So you've been up here now for a while and have been on the college football side of things, and you've been to Columbus, Ann Arbor, all these places, State College, your favorite place. Does it make more sense now? Did they get it right? Did Texas and Oklahoma get it right? Are they in the right place?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's worked out pretty well for both programs. You know, we'll see long-term what this looks like. I think, you know, it seems crazy to say that two games make that big of a difference in this big picture discussion, but Oklahoma winning at Tennessee and then at Alabama, you know, to put themselves in position to make the playoff, I thought was huge for that program, just given the trajectory of where it was headed before this season. And now, you know, I think the question I always had is Oklahoma is so used to going to the playoff every year, winning conference titles every year. What's it going to be like if, you know, they're suddenly 7-5 and 8-4 every year and they're not making the playoff and they're not going to the conference championship? We have a blueprint of what that is like in the Big Ten with Nebraska. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there are an entire generation that has no idea what Nebraska used to be. They were Georgia, they were Alabama, they were Ohio State, you know, in the 90s and even the 80s to some degree. So I think Oklahoma and then Texas making the playoff last year, getting to the Final Four, I think has validated the move that those two programs have made. And I think at this point, you know, if you're in the Big Ten, you're in the SEC, you're in pretty good position going forward. And if you're not, your existence is always going to be in semi-limbo given how much college football can change from one year to the next. I mean, we're, you know, they're banding about, you know, 2014 playoff, you know, the house settlement, how's that going to affect conference realignment when some of these deals come up, assuming that, you know, a grant of rights isn't signed through 2050 or whatever it was with this, private equity cash infusion into the Big Ten that now seems on hold at best. As long as you're in the two major conferences, you're in pretty good shape, because even though there are programs out there that are better than some of the programs that are inside the Big Ten and the SEC, one thing we've learned, you're not going to get expelled from your conference. You're not going to get ejected. No. So once you're in, you're in. And if you're not in, you know, you got to be a little bit worried about where you might be 5-10 years from now if the landscape continues to change.
Buddy, I'm trying to get relegation. I want to kick some people out. I want them
out. Who do you want to kick out the most? Who do you want out the most?
I want Purdue out. I want Rutgers out. I want Maryland out. Oh, oh yeah. I got to get rid of them. I got to get rid of these. I mean, this is just, you know why? Because I do a show in Columbus, Ohio, and the last three games that Ohio State has played, conference games, they're 30-plus point favorites. And it's not their fault. The schedule's the schedule, but this is absurd what we're dealing with here. Now, some of that's because Penn State didn't live up to their end of the bargain, but Ohio State, I mean, we're talking about only twice this season have they been a one score or less favorite, and the last three have been 30 plus.
Well, that's part of the reason Oklahoma wanted to go to the SEC, because they were tired of playing, you know, no offense to Iowa State or Kansas or Baylor. Like that's just not the same as playing Georgia and Florida and even like Auburn and Mississippi at home. So they wanted to, you know, especially if you're OU, your biggest home game every year is in Dallas.
Yeah.
Or your every other year. It's like you didn't really, other than Bedlam, there really wasn't like a huge conference draw every year. So yeah, like I mean, what do you talk about the Rutgers game this week? Like what do you even say?
We don't.
Other than, is Jeremiah Smith or Carnell Tate, are they okay? They're going to be good for Michigan. I mean, other than that, like, can Julian Sain win the Heisman? Well, he's probably not going to get that opportunity for a Heisman moment this weekend because nobody cares about this game.
Yep.
Yeah, I get it. And this was kind of a weird year where Ohio State's in-conference schedule, it just left a lot to be desired. Not Ohio State's fault. It's just,
no,
you know, they didn't play any of the good teams this year.
Buddy, he had a Tuesday press conference last week. Ryan did for UCLA. There wasn't a single question about the opponent. And it was UCLA's first game here in conference play.
Yeah.
Not one.
Yeah,
it's not interesting.
There's a lot of mediocre teams. in the Big. There's more mediocre teams in the Big Ten too than there are in the SEC.
Yeah,
I'm not saying one conference is better than the other, but this particular year, there's like seven Big Ten teams that are just not any good. And in the SEC, you've got 8-9 pretty good teams. It's not the case in the Big Ten this year.
How do you judge where this Buckeye team is? Orlovsky, who's on your network, of course, made some comments last week. I think they were taken a little bit out of context. Like, if you listen to all of it, he basically was saying, like, I don't know how good they are because they haven't been tested. And I think that that's relatively fair, but there was a chunk that was taken where he's like, they're not any good because they don't play anybody. And that's not necessarily what he was going with. We all see the talent. We all see the dominance. But it's like one of those things where you don't know until Ann Arbor, right?
I think that's fair. And Indiana, assuming that they make it to the Big Ten championship game, I think those two games are going to be really telling about, you know, where this team can go in the playoff. I mean, they're the team to beat, in my view. I have had them number one basically since the Texas game and haven't wavered off that. No one has hung with them, really, especially for, like, more than a half. And all they can do is beat the teams on their schedule, and they're just obliterating everybody. They have NFL talent on both sides of the ball. The linebacking core is incredible. Defensive line is really good. You've got Caleb Downs, and then offensively, the receivers are awesome. You know, the running game is starting to wake up a little bit with the two freshmen, and then you've got Julian Sand, who's about to break the FBS record for completion percentage in a season. So, like, all I can go off is what I've seen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they haven't played the toughest schedule, but that doesn't mean they're not awesome and not the favorites to win the national championship. And then you look elsewhere, and I mean, A&M was down 30-3 to South Carolina. You know, Alabama lost to Florida State and Oklahoma. I can kind of nitpick basically everyone in the top 12.
Yep.
Probably more easily than I can Ohio State. So, assuming the receivers are okay, and don't you agree, like, they're just being overly cautious with those two right now?
Yeah, I wouldn't play them Saturday. I wouldn't play them Saturday.
No, I mean, if you did, just sparingly, but you need them ready to go for next weekend, and then the Big Ten, and then the playoffs. So, yeah, I would expect them both. That's my sense, too, that they'll be ready to go for Michigan. But assuming those two guys are good and close to 100%, Ohio State, to me, is the team to beat.
Yeah, we would agree on that, my friend. Great talking to you as always, buddy. We'll do it again next week.
All right, see you both.
There he goes, the great Jake Trotter, senior college football writer at ESPN, joining us on the Bryan Heating and Cooling Systems Fan Guest Hotline. The night in sports, including the Jackets bombed in Winnipeg and history made on the West Coast. We'll get to all of that coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
If you miss a live show, you can catch the podcast. If you miss the podcast, our hosts have volunteered to have dinner with you.
Bye, the meatloaf!
The Fan.
Hey, what's up?
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Back in the day, if you wanted to listen to The Fan, you turned on the radio, and that was the end of the story.
But now, oh baby, stream us live on The Fan app.
TuneIn app, iHeart app, we're everywhere.
The Fan, Ohio's streaming destination.
Hey, what's up?
I trust Atlas Butler because they've been a local company for over 100 years. Not that you should trust everyone just because they're local. Atlas Butler, yes. Guy who sells watches out of his car, maybe not.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Favorite fan shows are available when you want them.
Head to 971thefan.com and hit that subscribe button.
The Fan, Ohio sports destination. With friends like these, who needs former college football players? This is Bishop and Friends.
Jackets in Winnipeg last night. It did not go well. Were both you guys locked into this one?
Define locked in. I saw him give up two goals in the second period, and I said, nope.
That's enough.
Yeah.
Yeah, Bo, you know I was locked in, so.
Yeah.
OU was trying not to lose to UMass because the Minutemen haven't won a game all season, so I was locked in there.
How'd that go?
Great. Ohio had like 300 yards rushing because it was a monsoon in Athens. They won.
Oh.
Yeah, it was the worst football weather.
Did you see the, speaking of the MAC, did you see that Akron's season is over?
I did not. I saw them beat Bowling Green last night.
So that's it. So they have their rivalries against Kent was a couple of weeks ago. And their season is now over. They don't have an opponent this weekend or next weekend. That's it. Season's over.
Could be
pretty wild.
The best thing for Akron, but
yeah, probably is, but it also speaks to like just
bummer
how kind of absurd all of this is that these are all under the same umbrella. Man. I mean, these are not the same things at all.
Had Akron beat Kent State last week, they're going bowling.
That would have been their sixth win.
Bummer.
Yeah. Anything you needed to be paying attention? This was Elvis back in net, Bake. Anything jump out to you?
I just, the travel, right? And to me, these are, I don't know if they're reasons or excuses, but you heard it a lot last night on the broadcast. Like, they got into Winnipeg at 2:30 in the morning, our time, 1:30 their time. And they just, they kept it close early, but they never really had their legs. And this is something I've talked about a lot with this Jackets team, is on nights like this, you need someone to drag you into the fights. And it seemed like nobody drug you into the fight. There was one time Matthew Olivier, you could tell he shot a puck wide into the corner because he wanted to go lay a hit on someone and maybe, you know, change momentum a little bit. And there was none of that. When you're almost through the second period and you've got 14 shots on goal on a guy that hasn't played in a long time, that's a problem. You didn't just test him. And maybe there were a couple Elvis would like to have back. I know they talked about the one, and somebody texted me, would Jed have had that, where he was kind of paying more attention to Jonathan Toews, I believe it was, than the shot? Who knows? Maybe. I don't know. But that wasn't the problem last night. I don't think Elvis was the problem. I just think the Jackets had nothing in the tank.
Yeah, and it's, in the end, it's
6-9.
It's 1 of 82. You know, they played a lot of games all over the continent, and it's 1 of 82. So as long as the big trend things are working, I think you're fine on that front. Pretty remarkable thing happened last night on the West Coast. It happened late. I didn't see any of it. I was in bed by the time that it happened. But LeBron James made his season debut for the Los Angeles Lakers. This is season number 23. 23. For LeBron James. He played 30 minutes. The Lakers blew out the Jazz, 140 to 126. He had 11 points, 12 assists in just 30 minutes. What was interesting about it is I was watching that. There's a couple of things that jump out to me. Number one, I am curious if he will take kind of like a third wheel role on this team. Is he finally open to that in his 40s at age 23rd season in the league? Because Doncic and Reeves are having a day. Both of them. And they're both, I mean, Doncic is the MVP of the league, and Reeves is probably an all-star. So is he willing to be kind of a third wheel on a team that's pretty damn good? And outside of Oklahoma City would probably be the team that you're going to have to deal with in the West, just because they're so difficult to guard with what Doncic does. Is he willing to do that? And then the other part of it is just his greatness, and the length of his greatness is hard to wrap your head around. The fact that he's still doing this 23 years in and is still considered a top 20 player in the league into his 40s. We don't really have the Brady one is the only one that's kind of similar, but quarterback is different than basketball in terms of wear and tear. But the Brady did this into his 40s and was still great. And LeBron is into his 40s now and in year 23 and is still great. And it doesn't feel like he's done this year. Like, how long can he do this?
It's interesting that you like the Brady comparison, because Brady kind of found himself in the perfect situation in Tampa with the right team, with the right defense. With LeBron right now, it's kind of the perfect situation for the regular season, because the Lakers, I think, 11-4. If Austin Reeves doesn't get Luka killed, because I don't know if you saw, there was like a lob that he tried and Luka landed awkwardly on his leg, and then he snubbed him post game. Like, that was what I woke up to, is like, does Luka hate Austin Reeves?
Well,
like,
Austin Reeves go, he called him friends, and Luka goes, he wants to be my friend, but he's not.
And if Luka hates you, then LA Laker fan hates you. But they can keep this, riding it through the regular season, get a 4, get a 5 seed in the Western Conference, then you can activate LeBron fully.
Bo, you talk about guys that played and played at a high level. And LeBron, I think that's pretty impressive last night. 11 points, 12 assists in 30 mm-hmm. minutes in his game back. I think of like Nolan Ryan pitched mm-hmm. a long time and still had that fastball. There's been a couple of UFC fighters, and like George Foreman won the heavyweight championship of the world at 45 or 46.
Yeah.
There's been a few hockey players that have done it, but you're right. Mm-hmm. There's not a lot that played at an elite level into their 40s.
No, there isn't. And staying on that team, it's pretty improbable that Austin Reeves is as good as he is. That's an undrafted guy who played 5 years of college basketball. He played at Wichita State originally and then transferred to Oklahoma, goes undrafted, and somehow has played himself into being like an all-star. Basketball is different than football, man. It is. There's a dynamic to it. There is the idea of drafting 19-year-olds and seeing if they pop and kind of waiting for them to go. And then all of a sudden you get on a guy who's a little bit of a late bloomer like him, and he can be special. But like that wouldn't happen, I don't think, in the NFL. An undrafted guy turning into a Pro Bowler? That is so rare. In basketball, you can usually identify him. But something with him was missed, and he's been great for them. So really cool to see LeBron, and this is something where the basketball world knew who LeBron was at 15, and then all he did was deliver on all of it, deliver on all the greatness for 20, like a quarter century. It's crazy. One NFL news note to update you on: Mike Tomlin says Aaron Rodgers' wrist is ahead of so no surgery on this, and it's really just about is he healthy enough to do it. No surgery needed to repair the fracture in his left non-throwing wrist. Tomlin said, really, it's about bracing and securing it for his comfort and safety, and then it's about how functional he is. Rodgers is not going to practice today. Friday was going to be the big day when it comes to evaluations on his side of things. All right, coming up next, second hour of the program, we'll do a little higher, lower coming up. First, Bishop and Friends, right here on The Fan.
Hold on to your butts. Rivalry Week is coming.
Sponsored by your Central Ohio Toyota dealers.
Starting on Monday, we get you ready for, you know, The Fan.
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
From the Lindsay Honda Studios.
Honda makes the cars. Lindsay makes the difference. Visit lindsayhonda.com.
WBNSFM, HD1 Columbus.
Good morning, I'm Eric Reeser. The Blue Jackets took it on the chin last night in Winnipeg. The Jets outscored the CBJ 4-1 in the final 40 minutes en route to a 5-2 win. Jackets will head to Toronto to battle the Maple Leafs tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. In college football, Ohio State remained the number one team in the playoff bracket. Indiana is 2, Texas A&M's 3rd, Georgia 4. The committee released their third projection last night. Just two more remain before the final reveal on December 7th. The Buckeyes are 31.5-point favorites, hosting Rutgers this Saturday at noon. It'll be senior day for Ohio State. No word yet on the status of Jeremiah Smith or Carnell Tate. Ryan Day says they don't expect them to be out long-term. Hear more from OSU's head coach tomorrow at noon on the Ryan Day Radio Show. This update is sponsored by BMI Federal Credit Union. Enjoy rates lower than the national average, plus a special rate on balance transfers with a Visa Platinum or Visa with Rewards credit card.
Taking the art of sports radio and day drinking to a whole new level. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
Indeed you are. In time for a little higher lower on a first Friday miracle. Hit it, fellas.
Bishop and Friends present Higher or Lower.
Sponsored by the Waterworks. Call the Waterworks and Header Heating and Cooling today at 614-232-2222 or visit online at thewaterworks.com.
Week 3 for the CFP. You had to wait a little bit longer last night. It was Michigan State beating Kentucky at Madison Square Garden, and it was like a minute 40 left to go in the game, and it's like 8:31. Like, come on. Just go to the guys up in like one of the concourses.
They always, This is always the one they do it, right? They always do it around this Madison Square Garden game. Both the boys were into it. Beamsy likes Kansas, and NBC likes Kentucky. So they were both kind of into the games and watching them a little bit. But I was trying to explain to Beamsy that, like, the KU game, buddy, it's not going to start at 9. Like, it's going to be later than that because of all of this. So, yeah, it's always an awkward one, is this one. And just big picture, before we get into this, it's clear that the committee does not understand the assignment in terms of what ESPN wants. ESPN wants shakeup, and the College Football Playoff Committee is like, yeah, we're good. They very much this year have a poll mentality.
Yeah, no changes to the top three, Ohio State, Indiana, and Texas A&M. Those remain the three lone unbeatens in the Power Four conferences. At number four, you'll have Georgia. At number five, Texas Tech. At number six, Ole Miss. Higher or lower for the Rebels at six?
I think Texas Tech's better than Ole Miss. Kiffin's done a really remarkable job there. I do think that he is genuinely torn on what to do next. It does, to me, feel like he is at the absolute ceiling of what can be accomplished there, that this is the absolute ceiling. I think there are recruiting things that are always going to be tough there. They've shown a point in terms of the portal that they're ready to go, and I think he's a hell of a coach. I mean, I wanted him at Penn State, but clearly that's not going to happen. I don't know if this Ole Miss team is even as good as last year's Ole Miss team. But they've got the wins, right? They got the win against Oklahoma. They got the wins against Florida. Was down this year. They beat LSU this year. Their only loss is an 8-point loss to Georgia. So they're going to be a playoff team. They deserve to be a playoff team. But I do not think that they are better than Texas Tech. So I think that this 1-6 is fine. I'm fine with Texas A&M being there at 3. If they play Georgia, which I think is almost impossible, right? The only way they would play Georgia is if Alabama lost again. And we'll get to Bama in a second, but I think that's the only way they would play Georgia. So I think this is largely fine. And honestly, of all the teams in the SEC that I'd like to be, it's probably the Bulldogs.
Yeah, I think the committee probably got this top seven. All right. I think the Oklahoma argument with a healthy Mateer, would they beat Oregon? Are they better than Oregon? I don't know how that goes, but I think the committee, I think they got this all right. I think Ole Miss is right where they should be.
Mm-hmm.
At number seven on the College Football Playoff Committee's top 25, you've got Oregon. Oklahoma's in at 8. The Sooners jump 3 spots. Notre Dame's in at 9. Alabama falls 6 spots to number 10. Higher or lower for the Tide at 10?
All right, there's a couple of things I want to discuss in this tranche of teams. Number one, if Oregon has healthy receivers, which they haven't had in a couple of weeks, and I don't know what the status of those receivers are. I mean, they haven't had them for a while. But if they can have healthy receivers, I think they're better than Texas Tech and Ole Miss. But I'm not James Crepia. I don't know like where they are health wise with that. So I'm very curious to see what they look like this, because they're kind of they're the team nobody's talking about. It's like they lost to Indiana and everybody forgot about Oregon. And I still think that their overall talent is better than teams above them. I like their quarterback more. I think they got defensive player. I think they have more weapons when healthy. So I think Oregon is a little bit disrespected. It's all going to work out fine. They're going to get a win. They beat USC this week, and they're going to get fine. Where they're rated at, you know, I don't know how much that matters. But I think Oregon is somebody that I think is being a little bit disrespected here because of who they lost to. I think if they lost by that score to Ohio State, they'd probably be sitting at 4 in the country. But because they lost to Indiana, they're all the way down at 7. And they probably don't deserve that. They probably deserve a little bit better than that. Bake, you want to weigh in on Oregon real quick before we get to the rest of this?
I was going to say it probably hurts them, right, that they lost at home too in this discussion. Maybe. But those teams all right there are fascinating. I think the interesting conversation could be, and I believe Notre Dame is better than Miami, and I believe if they played again, Notre Dame would win. But they're both sitting there with the same record, and Miami beat Notre Dame.
Well, that's
so. And I know we'll get to. I know we'll get to that. But it just, that's all interesting. I really don't have a problem with much that the committee did in this top 12 to 15 range.
Okay, so you asked about Alabama. How is Alabama ranked behind Notre Dame? What has Notre Dame done since losing their first two games of the season that you're valuing? This is what the committee's doing. They're valuing good losses over quality wins. Notre Dame has, I mean, I'll pull up their schedule. Before I even pull it up, and I'm going to do it live on the air here, my guess is the only quality win they have, the only ranked win they have, is against USC. I think that's it.
And what you said about the quality, that's almost verbatim what the committee said last night. Is how they valued Notre Dame's quality losses. They're very close losses, they like to say. The first 2 weeks of the season to who then. And even now, those look like better losses because of where Miami and where they have Texas A&M. Obviously, the Aggies unblemished, but it's like we're doing this now.
Oh, Alabama has the most stupefying loss. They lost at Florida State. It's a bad loss. There's no question. But from that point on, these are the teams they ranked. The teams that they played. Number 6, Georgia. Number 16, Vanderbilt. Number 14, Missouri. Number 11, Tennessee. At South Carolina. LSU. Number 11, Oklahoma. Loss at home, 23-21. And I don't think this is some super Bama team. I don't. But how is that not more impressive than what Notre Dame's done over the last 2 months?
And, Bo, to further your point on that, it's like, well, Notre Dame had quality losses in there at the beginning of the season.
Yeah.
Well, I know Alabama lost to Florida State, but that was the beginning of the season.
Beginning of the season.
So that's a great point. Maybe Alabama should be over Notre Dame.
Yeah, and then the problem is, but the thing is like, where do they start with these two lost teams? And Oklahoma just won in Tuscaloosa, so they have to be ahead of Bama. Mm-hmm. Who does Oklahoma? I got to pull this up. Who does Oklahoma have left? So,
was it lose this Missouri week. LSU?
They're home, but they got Missouri LSU next 2 weeks. They're not impervious to losing either one of those.
Back to the CFP rankings. At 11, BYU. At 12, Utah. At 13, Miami. Higher or lower for the Canes at 13?
I think the most fascinating thing in this whole operation is what they do for Miami. So, Miami has two games left. They're at Virginia Tech and at Pitt. They have two conference losses, so there's no scenario where they're going to play for an ACC championship. And correct me if I'm wrong, you have to take the ACC champion. You don't have to take the highest ranked ACC team, right? The conference championship game's component is still there.
Correct. And as we've heard, if that ACC champ isn't rated higher than other conference champions,
right,
they may not get in.
Right. So that would lead to, that leads you to a Georgia Tech, Virginia ACC final. Is that what we're kind of headed towards?
That's
my God,
we're looking
that's
at.
Brutal. Yeah. So the one loss ACC teams are Georgia Tech, Virginia, Pittsburgh, and SMU. Those are the three. So it's going to depend on kind of tiebreakers on all this stuff. So Georgia Tech has Pitt this week and then Georgia. That's pretty brutal. Virginia has just Virginia Tech left. That's it. Pittsburgh has Georgia Tech and Miami. So that's why he was saying what he was saying last week going into Notre Dame, right? We can get blown out. Doesn't matter. We beat Georgia Tech, Miami. We're playing in the conference championship game. SMU has Louisville and Cal. I have no idea what their tiebreakers are, but they're going to be in the thick of this thing, too. I think Miami, guys, to me, Miami seems out. I almost can't see a scenario how they get in.
Yeah, it was interesting last night on the bracket reveal they had with Miami and Tulane. They had brackets around their logos. Mm-hmm. And the gold bracket, they had like an indicator saying must win conference championship.
Yeah, but I don't know how Miami can even play in it.
The scenario for them to get there is wild and crazy. I don't know if there is a path for them.
Back to the rankings. We'll have Miami at 13, like I said. At 14, Vanderbilt. 15, USC. Higher or lower for the Trojans at 15?
Yeah, I think USC's better than that. I know you don't love them, Bake, but I think they're better than 15th in the country. I think their talent is. I think their quarterback is. I think their only losses are what? They lost at Illinois and at Notre Dame.
Yeah.
That's it. And Illinois was on the last play. So they've got some quality wins. I think USC is better than they're being shown here. Now, it's not going to matter. They're in a situation where they got to win in Eugene or they're done. They're cooked. So I think that's kind of where they're at. But I think they deserve to be ranked a little higher than this. I don't understand the committee's love affair with Utah. And I like Utah not as much as you, Bake. But I like Utah. And their love affair with Utah is pretty wild. Because there is not... their quality win, it's Cincinnati. That's kind of it.
Arizona now, State.
Yeah, but that was without the quarterback. Arizona State didn't have Levitt in that game. So that's it. They don't really have anything else. Now they bomb people. They bomb Colorado. Everybody does. Bomb Baylor. They got the two Kansas schools left. To me, it feels like big picture. The committee is putting themselves in a if the SEC can't get five, then the Big 12's getting two instead of the Big 10 getting four, is what it seems like to me.
Yeah, I think you're right with that, and I think it kind of switched over the last week or so. I think the SEC is set up better to get five now than the Big 12 to get two, but it does seem like how they've placed these teams and how they are. I don't know USC if they're higher or lower. I think the argument, Utah? That they would be over Utah. I don't know how much further up you can put USC.
They should be ahead of Vanderbilt. What's Vanderbilt got to show for themselves?
They got a really good loss against Texas.
Yeah, where they were down three touchdowns and it made it look closer than it was at the end.
Yeah.
I got another one for you. What made them randomly put Tulane in the top 25?
I do think with the group of five, they have them all as ping pong balls and all.
I agree.
In a bingo wheel.
But why are they not ahead of, why would they not just rank, if they're going to arbitrarily put a team in, why not James Madison? Why not, why would you not put North Texas in? Why would you not put Navy in?
Navy.
They just randomly put Tulane in?
Bo, going back. Because
Jake Retzlaff's there? Like, I don't, what, why?
Going back to your better loss scenario thing. Which I'm sick of that. Like this team sucks. Has a better loss. Like how is Tennessee still in this? I know you've been hammering
why.
This drum for a while, but Tennessee, like they went Tennessee.
They went up three spots, Bake.
They're ahead of Illinois. And who has Tennessee beat? Illinois has at least beat USC, and Illinois' losses are pretty good, just like Tennessee's. Like how are they
ahead?
Know why. It's so ridiculous. So,
this is what's really, you want to do that. Actually, I'll do this on the other side of this quick timeout, and you know exactly why this is the case. And it's for something that's coming in a couple of weeks. We'll get to it coming up next. Bishop and Friends are here on The Fan.
Head to 971thefan.com to listen on demand and subscribe to all our podcasts.
Wasting time has never been easier. The Fan,
Ohio sports destination.
More than a few of our...
I trust Atlas Butler because they've been a local company for over 100 years. Not that you should trust everyone just because they're local. Atlas Butler, yes. Guy who sells watches out of his car, maybe not.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Starting Monday, it's Rivalry Week,
or as we like to call it, Beat Michigan Week, or Try Not to Get Pepper Sprayed Week.
Rivalry Week sounds better.
Let's go with that.
Rivalry Week on The Fan is sponsored by your Central Ohio Toyota dealers.
Ryan Day has proven he has what it takes to win a natty, but can he take control of the biggest rivalry in sports?
Will Julian Sain or Jeremiah Smith have a Heisman moment?
Will the fan staff consume 500 wings in a single setting?
Let's find out together.
Proud to be your home of the Buckeyes. The Fan
at the Ohio Lottery.
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
A nice mix of sun and clouds as we go into the day on Wednesday, and temperatures a little bit milder as we do get up into the low 50s this afternoon. Mostly cloudy tonight with lows in the 40s, and then for Thursday we'll see more clouds, but also warmth as daytime highs top out in the mid to low 50s. For The Fan, I'm meteorologist Meredith Garfalo with the 10 Weather Impact Forecast.
Monday starts up a pretty big week.
Gobble, gobble, and all that crap.
Let's focus on what really matters.
Rivalry Week.
Sponsored by
by your Central Ohio Toyota dealers.
The Fan, distilled sports discussion, served in light beer quantities. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
Yeah, the well, first I should tell you that we are proudly brought to you and sponsored by our great friends at Diamond Cellar, your true jeweler for over 78 years. So we asked the question, why Tennessee? Why? What was it that Tennessee did last week? Can you imagine being on that committee and be like, oh my God, you guys see Tennessee last week, dude? They put it on New Mexico State. 42-9. What a dominant squad. We got to move them up three spots. Well, hold on a sec. Where are they in the league? Oh, they're a robust 3-3. What is their quality win? Well, I don't know. They're really impressive against Kentucky and Arkansas. Really dominated Mississippi State. So why? Well, you know why. Because who do they play in 2 weeks? Vanderbilt. And what does that do? They beat Vanderbilt beats Tennessee, who stinks. They beat Tennessee. Ooh, what a metric. What a win. What a job. This goes back to a conversation we had a couple of weeks ago about how the Big Ten has not done a good enough job branding their teams. There's a million factors to this, and a lot of them is something I've talked about a lot of that CBS 330, and people just buy it. They just buy it. They are 3-3 in their league. They are 7-3, and they're ranked. What do they have on Illinois? What do they have on Washington? What do they have on Fort Lauderdale, Iowa? How is Tennessee ranked ahead of Illinois? At least Illinois got a ranked win. Beat USC. Illinois' losses. Now, they did get bombed by Indiana, but they were down some players. They lost to Ohio State, and they lost at Washington. That's it. And they can't get ranked ahead of Tennessee because you see that brand and the Volunteer Army, and, oh, it's so hard to win at Rocky Top. No, it's not. It's not hard to win at Rocky Top.
Bo, I will say this. I was thinking of this as we're talking about all of this. So in the break, because I know you and I have both been proponents of this, use the BCS formula to get your 12-team playoff. So I looked up, our friends at On3 put this out. So Ohio State would be number one, Indiana 2, Texas A&M 3, Georgia 4, Ole Miss 5, Oregon 6, Texas Tech 7, Oklahoma 8, Notre Dame 9, Alabama 10. And then some of the teams we've talked about, they have Utah at 12. They have USC ahead of Miami, 14-15. They have Texas 17, Michigan 18. They have Tennessee 20, and they do not have Illinois ranked. They have, at the bottom, James Madison, North Texas, Tulane, and Houston.
And you know why that is, though? Because there's a human component to the BCS. And the human component would look at the AP and coaches poll, and they would say, well, they're ranked, so they got to be. What has anybody seen from Tennessee? The AP currently has Tennessee 20th, and the coaches poll, I don't even show the, oh yeah, here it is. Coaches poll probably has them even higher, knowing them.
They're 20th, no, they 20th in the coaches
as well.
Poll.
Yeah, they're 20th as well. So, that's why those things happen. I don't know why this committee is allergic to ranking James Madison in North Texas. I don't understand that. I mean, Houston's 8-2. Like, And yet they give this incredible benefit of the doubt to Tennessee. And my conspiracy theory on it is very simple, that they're trying to set up a path for Vanderbilt to be the fifth SEC team because they believe in the SEC. They rank 9 SEC teams to 6 in the Big Ten. So they believe in it more. And they're setting up Vanderbilt to have some quality wins. Because if you pull up Vanderbilt right now, they have two ranked wins. They have three ranked wins, but their ranked wins are against, boy, how bad was this? At number 11, South Carolina. You believe South Carolina started the year ranked 11th in the country? LSU, number 10 LSU, and number 15 Missouri. Those are their ranked wins. And I'm not picking on Vandy. Like, I don't mean to be picking on Vandy. Like, it's just, that's what they're trying to do, is make sure 5 get in. And I think the reason that they're trying to do that is because they are going to have a massive issue with Alabama. A massive issue with Alabama. Alabama, right now as it stands, is ranked 10th in this ranking. They really did not need Alabama losing to Oklahoma last week. That's a bad loss for this committee, because what do you do with Bama? They've got two losses. One of them's first game of the year, and then they lose to Oklahoma. They've had it's been a brutal stretch of games for them. And wherever these teams are ranked, and you know, some of them you want to say are too high, but they're all quality. You know, they have talent on them. They got Eastern Illinois this week, then they're at Auburn. They'll be big favorite in both of those, but anything can happen in a rivalry game. But let's say they win both of those and they're sitting there at 10-2. Guess what their reward for that is? SEC championship game, most likely against Texas A&M. Unless A&M loses to Texas, and then it would be Georgia, I believe.
It is.
So now you're going to have to play a rematch with Georgia, a team that, albeit you do own, but from a talent equate standpoint, would match you up. And now what do you do if Alabama loses that game and has their third loss?
Well, they're out then. That's what they want.
I agree. Well, I don't know if they are. I mean, last year they didn't. And now that was Ward Manuel putting his foot in his mouth. And they said, if you play in a conference championship game, it can't harm you. That's how SMU got in. I assume that they've adjusted that, but they haven't said it one way or another. And the Alabama issue is what I think they're guarding against.
I don't want to hear this. If you lose your conference championship game, that's not fair because you played an extra game. Oh, let's just think of it as an extension of the playoffs. Like, if you didn't win, you lost to a team that is getting in, you're done. Like, I don't want to hear that argument.
Issues, right? Like, if a team loses, like if A&M is undefeated and they lose the conference championship game to Alabama, you're still putting them in the playoff.
Because they were firmly in already.
Yeah.
Like, that's a different thing. But these, well, what if, the Big 12, like, well, they're only two. Like, if BYU loses to Texas Tech, well, their only two losses are to Texas Tech. Well, you couldn't beat them, and they're in. I don't care. Bye. See you later. Yeah.
I do think when you have the second to, like, the penultimate rankings, we'll have a conference championship game that'll be addressed. But I can understand after last year's debacle, they have it more. I will have to take it case by case, because no conference championship game, especially in the Power Four, will be equal and should not be treated as equal. And I have a feeling with what I've seen from this committee that they will. That they're not just going to blanket statement anything in regards to the title tilts. But we're still a ways from that.
This bracket as it stands right now is one that I think would be appealing to everybody. It's also one that there's almost no chance that it happens.
Yeah.
Really no chance that it happens. So as it stands right now, they have Tulane as the 12 taking on Texas Tech. The winner there would play into Georgia as the four.
Okay.
I don't know that there's any scenario where Georgia can get to the four line. I just don't. I think other teams are going to have other metrics. I don't know that they can get there, because it stands right now, it's almost impossible for Georgia to play in the SEC title game unless Texas A&M loses to Texas, which I guess is possible. But if Georgia wins the SEC at 12-1, they're the two.
Right. Their only path to a bye is winning the SEC. And that puts
Georgia being the four and Texas A&M being the three is impossible. That would never happen. Ohio State or Indiana, one of them will be the one. The other one's going to be the three or the four. They're not going to be one and two. So that's impossible. The other thing that's impossible is they got Miami as an 11. Barring just complete chaos in the SEC, like Oklahoma losing to Missouri, Alabama losing the Iron Bowl, Vanderbilt losing, I don't see any scenario where Miami gets in as an at-large. And that's what they would have to be, because I don't see any path where they could get in as an ACC champ.
Yeah, the whole thing with the Canes last night I thought was the biggest waste of... I mean, this whole thing's really a waste of time.
Sure.
But with what they did with Miami, having that gold bracket around their name saying they must win the conference championship game, okay, well, you got to try to unbox that, and it's... You can't. You almost cannot do it.
It would take...
So why are we why are we having Miami there?
Yeah. I mean, you really should have just put ACC champion.
ACC champion worked perfectly.
Because there's no scenario I see where Miami... I think they are up against a concrete ceiling, barring just total chaos. Like, everybody ahead of them losing multiple times. And I don't think that that's very likely. What do we think is going to happen? And what path would you want Ohio State to have? We'll get to that in 2 minutes. Bishop and Friends, right here.
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE. Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Cellar, your true jeweler for over 75 years. The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
Bo knows many people.
He talks to the interesting ones on this show.
This is Bishop and Friends.
All right, here's the task. We do this every week. How do we think this will look when it's put in Sharpie? So what the task here is how do you, what path can you navigate to get to a playoff? So let's just do it. If you're listening, just think top to bottom, 12 versus 5, 8 versus 9, 11 versus 6, 10 versus 7, 5, 12 feeds into the 4, 8, 9 feeds into the 1, 11, 6 feeds into the 3, and 10, 7 feeds into the 2. So who do you have as your 12 seed, Reese?
I have Navy / G5.
God, it'd be amazing if Navy got in. Be unbelievable. Got to win out. Got to beat Army, and then they'd have to win the American Championship game, which I don't even know how they do that.
It'd be before Navy or before Army Navy.
Is that when it is?
It's the week before conference title weekend. Yeah.
Holy cow! So they could play for their conference championship and then have to play Army Navy after.
Mm-hmm.
What a weird mess that is. All right. How about you, Bake?
I have Tulane as the number 12 seed.
Okay. I had this last week. I'm going to stay here. I'm going James Madison. I think they have the easiest path. I think they're going to get there. And I think that the American will cannibalize itself a little bit. So I'm going to go James Madison, who they don't even have ranked. But they're higher ranked in the AP and the coaches than the others. All right. Your 5 seed playing in, this is the easiest spot. This is the 5 spots where you want to be. Who is your 5?
So mine's Indiana. So I do want that James Madison thing to happen. I think mm-hmm. the Hoosiers do fall out after losing the Big Ten championship. So if that's the case where Indiana's the 5, then do James Madison, please.
Okay. All right. So you have Indiana the 5. Who mm-hmm. do you have the 5, Bick?
I have Texas A&M as the 5.
Okay. So I have Georgia the 5. I have Georgia as the 5. And I think they would love being in that spot as the 5. Home game in Athens against a team that they're going to be bigly favored by. All right, the 8-9. Who do you have as in the 8-9 game, Reese?
I have Tech as the 8. I have 9 Notre Dame.
Texas Tech?
Oh, Georgia Tech. Excuse me. Sorry.
Okay, so you have ACC champion Georgia Tech as the 9
yes.
playing at?
Hosting Notre Dame.
Oh, them hosting Notre yes. Dame. Georgia Tech hosting Notre Dame. All right, Bake, how do you have it?
I have Oklahoma hosting Notre Dame.
Okay, so I have the same matchup you do. I just have Notre Dame hosting Oklahoma in this one.
And I do think for the bracket, like that Sunday at noon, I think they've got the bracket figured out first, and then they rank the teams based on how they are seeded.
Agreed. Yeah, I think they're going to make television yeah. shows. So and this game will either be in South Bend or it'll be in Norman. Either way, that'll be the prime. That's going to be, to me, for my bracket, that looks like the marquee one is Notre Dame versus Oklahoma in the 8-9 game, whether it's in Norman or in South Bend. All right, who do you have as your 1?
My 1 is Ohio State.
Yeah.
Same.
Did I do the 4?
You did not.
Okay, who do you have in the 4, the 5-12 playing into the 4?
I have Texas A&M as the 4.
Okay, who do you have as the 4? Babe?
I have Indiana as the 4.
Okay, I have Texas Tech as the 4. I have Texas Tech as the 4. So 5-12, James Madison, Georgia playing into Texas Tech, Oklahoma, Notre Dame playing into Ohio State. That's the way that I'm predicting the top half to look. All right, bottom half of the bracket, your 11 seed, Reese, is whom?
Alabama.
Okay. So getting there, I'm curious your path on them getting there. Do you have them playing in the SEC title and losing?
Yes.
Okay, so you have a 3-loss Bama team in.
Yes.
Bake.
I have Georgia Tech, ACC champ Tech, in at 11.
Okay, I went ACC champion here, 2 at 11, and I went SMU because why the hell not? The beloved ponies. Let's go. Find a way to get in, and let's see if we can get them in even with the 3 losses. If they win the ACC, they could. Who do you have as the 6, Reese? So this is Alabama playing whom?
My 6 would be Ole Miss.
Okay, samesies. Who do you got?
Ole Miss.
Okay, so I think Ole Miss feels locked into the 6. To me, I don't see a scenario how they're going to go higher. I don't see how they go lower as long as they win out. They'll be the 6. You have, all right, so then that feeds into the 3 seed. Who do you have as your 3 seed?
My 3 is Texas Tech.
Okay, so you have Texas Tech going all the way to 3.
I have the Red Raiders at 3-2.
Okay, this is where I have Indiana. I have Indiana going just from 2-3 after the loss to Ohio State in the Big Ten championship game. I still have them getting a bye. They'd be 12-1 on the season. And I have the Hoosiers sitting there as the 3 seed. Okay, your 10-7 game, Reese.
My 10-7's BYU or Utah.
So you have two Big 12s getting in.
I do.
Okay, all right.
So my 10-7, I have Oregon hosting Bama. What I just argued against, I think they're going to do. They're going to put, Bama's going to lose, to me, Bama's going to lose to Georgia in the SEC championship game, because I think Texas gets Texas A&M.
I do, too.
And they're going to put Alabama in because they've split with Georgia. So I have Oregon hosting Bama in the 7-10.
You, who did you have as your 7, Reese? You had Oregon as your 7?
My 7's Oklahoma.
Okay, so you have Oregon even. Where do you have Oregon?
Oh, no, I have Oregon then. You're right.
Sorry. Oregon's the 7.
Wrong O school.
Wrong O school. So you, I have it the same as you, Bake. I think that's what they're going to do, too. I think I have it a little different than you. I have Texas A&M beating Texas, playing in the SEC championship game, beating Alabama. And I think Bama, Oregon, my rationale behind that is Texas A&M had their scare and they'll be ready to go against Texas. I think Texas seems a little fragile to me after the way that ended in Georgia.
So I think in your scenario, if Bama goes to the SEC championship game and they lose to Texas A&M, I think Bama would be out. But if they go to and they face Georgia and they lose to Georgia, then they're going to be like, well, they're 1-1 against each other. Mm-hmm. And I think they'll put them in that way.
I think this is 3-loss SEC getting in. And I think Bama would basically beat out the BYU, Utah, Vanderbilt contingent for what is essentially the last spot. The 10 is the last at large spot for me. I think the ACC champ cannot go higher than 11, and I think that the group of five is obviously 12. So this is your last at-large spot is Bama. So I got Oregon hosting Bama, feeding into Texas A&M. So that's not ideal from the Texas A&M standpoint, because if Bama does win, you'd have to play them twice. You can't worry about that stuff anymore. If you're Ohio State and you're looking at a path of, the way I have it, Notre Dame and Oklahoma in whatever bowl game that is, and then you'd play the winner of Georgia, Texas Tech. That's kind of the path you'd be looking at from the Buckeyes perspective. I'll tell you the place I wouldn't want to be is the 4. Because I think that 5 is going to be a squad. That's either going to be Indiana, or to me, I have it as Georgia. If everything goes chalk, I have it as Georgia. Other than that 5 is going to be Indiana. And then what do they do with Texas Tech? Who they like? They like Texas Tech a lot, and they're going to get a rematch with BYU most likely, right?
Yeah, that's the way it looks. And if Tech wins that game, I think the Red Raiders get a bye.
I do, too.
I do, too. I think they're set up for that.
Yeah. And that's based off of, like you said, the past couple of weeks, this committee likes the Big 12. That's why they're keeping Oregon or Utah BYU one of the last two out. The first two out, I should say.
Yeah. That's. I think that this thing is going to come. And you can... You know, you've got to monkey with the numbers and the seedings for television and so forth and so on, and they will. I think they learned from last year. I think you won't. I mean, they already did. They already got rid of automatic bye for top, you know, for the ACC and all that. That's all gone. Boise State getting a bye, all that stuff's gone. So that's all gone. And I think what they'll do is they'll make television shows here at this first round. I think that the real inflection point for this committee is going to be Alabama. I think Alabama's a mess. I think Oklahoma beating Alabama is just brutal for them. I think that's brutal for the committee, and I think it's going to force their hand to put a 3-loss team in.
Bo, I think there's a good chance that Ohio State, because I don't know if there's any path that scares me for Ohio State if Ohio State's playing the way they should and they're capable of. Because I think they are the best team in the country, and I don't know how close it is. But
sure.
I think that potential first game for Ohio State, the winner of the 8-9, whether that be an Oklahoma or a Notre Dame or a Bama or Oregon or however that goes, I think that potentially might be Ohio State's first game might be their toughest.
Dude, welcome to Oregon last year.
Yeah.
The Ducks were undefeated, and their reward for that was the Rose Bowl against Ohio State. The one seed is not. It ain't. It ain't. And the reality is it's because these conferences aren't created equal. And so you're in a situation where I agree with you. Like, it's hard to get a read on Notre Dame. Like, I have that as Oklahoma, Notre Dame. It's hard to get a read on Notre Dame just because of the lack of teams that they've played that are serious. But I thought they were a good team at the beginning. Those running backs are a full day. It would be a conversation. Can CJ Carr handle it? He appointed himself pretty good in the Miami and Texas A&M games, and those were at the beginning of the year. So, yeah, the one seed is no cupcake at all. I don't see Notre Dame. Couple of certainties. The winner of Ohio State, Indiana is going to be the one seed. I think that that's a lock. The other things that I think that are a lock, I don't think Notre Dame can get higher than eight. I think that's the ceiling for them. I think they're no higher than eight, and they're either the eight or the nine. And I think Ole Miss is the six. I think there's no higher than that they can go is the six. I think the variables come with how the SEC championship shakes out and then what to do with the Big 12 champion.
Caleb posed this on the YouTube, and I think it's a good question.
Okay.
What if something happens with Kiffin here, and they are like, hey, you do need to decide, and we're going to get into this in thing or not a thing, but you do need to decide, or he's like, I am leaving. I'm going somewhere else. Would that change how the committee thinks of Ole Miss going into this, and could they possibly drop them a little bit without their head coach?
I mean, can you imagine that scenario if it happens? I don't even want to contemplate it because, like, does his coordinator leave with him, or does his coordinator stay at Ole Miss? Like, if he leaves, isn't he taking his whole staff? So who coaches Ole Miss? Houston Nutt? I mean, I don't think he can leave Ole Miss. I don't think he can. Not right now. Not this year. And he's a young dude. There will be more opportunities for him to leave Ole Miss down the road. Might be a better job. Might be the Bama job next year. Who knows? If Kalen DeBoer loses the SEC title game, misses the playoff for a second straight year, it might be at Alabama next year. We'll hit thing or not a thing up next. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
If you miss a live show, you can catch the podcast. If you miss the podcast, our hosts have volunteered to have dinner with you.
Ma, the meatloaf!
The Fan.
Nothing makes a gathering.
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Brian Dace Buckeyes are back at the Shoe for a Big Ten battle with Rutgers.
Live fan coverage starts Saturday morning at 6:30 with the kick at noon.
Every game, every season, proud to be your home of the Buckeyes, the Fan, Ohio sports destination.
I'm Leslie from Pella.
I trust Atlas Butler because they've been a local company for over 100 years. Not that you should trust everyone just because they're local. Atlas Butler, yes. Guy who sells watches out of his car, maybe not.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
It's almost Football Friday. All play and no work.
Sponsored by Tansky Sawmill Toyota.
Your home for football, the Fan. Pull up a stool and ask the bartender for something neat, because Uncle Bo is on the radio. This is Bishop and Friends.
Indeed it is. It's still time to get your Hey Guys questions into the fellas at 971BFS on the X platform. Also in the YouTube chat, we will tackle both of those in about 13 minutes. Time now for a little thing or not a thing. Hit it, guys.
Thing or not a thing.
Sponsored by Billiards Plus. Find your next grill and everything you need for the master griller. Billiards Plus on Dublin Center Drive in Dublin.
All right, so we talked yesterday. There were several outlets that had reporting Ole Miss officials pressing Lane Kiffin and his agent Jimmy Sexton for a resolution. Keith Carter, Ole Miss athletic director, has reportedly asked Kiffin to reach a decision by the Egg Bowl on whether or not he's going to remain at Ole Miss past this season. That comes amid reports of interest from LSU and Florida. ESPN sources stopped short of calling it an ultimatum, but they added that Carter and others want an answer so they can prepare for the postseason, a potential coaching transition before the CFP, and a search to identify Kiffin's replacement if, in fact, he does take the LSU or the Florida jobs. Lane went on the Pat McAfee show yesterday and says none of that is true.
That's absolutely not true. There's been no ultimatum in anything like that at all. And so I don't know where that came from, like a lot of stuff that comes out there. Like I said, man, we're having a blast. I love it here. I mean, our running back's sitting right over here. Come on over. And it just couldn't be better. Like I said, you pray for things. Our fans prayed for this type of thing, and now we're in the middle of it. So enjoy it. You're 10-1, you're getting ready, you got a bye week, you get to watch half the country lose, and there's no way we can lose Saturday, and then you play the Egg Bowl and go dominate that and keep that Egg Bowl trophy home where it's been for a long time.
Sources did confirm to ESPN Tuesday that Kiffin's ex-wife Layla, his son Knox, and his brother Chris Kiffin visited Gainesville on Sunday. There's also reporting that some of his family was in Baton Rouge over the weekend. A thing or not a thing?
All right, so look, all of this is a thing. I don't know what Kiffin is supposed to do here. I really don't. You know, only he knows what's in his heart and all of it. The real problem here, I'm going to give you a solution to the real problem. The real problem here is the calendar in college football has been broken for a long time. And if you really want to fix this, in order to get true solutions, sometimes you have to sacrifice things. So what I would do in college football is I would say, let's get rid of the early signing day. Let's get rid of early entry players leaving high school early to go play, do a semester and go through spring and all of that. And let's have this be a dead period. As long as we're competing for a college football playoff, and that goes all the way to the end of January, then damn it, that's a dead period. You can't transfer in that period. You can't recruit in that period. That period is a dead period. You guys made the mess. Now go sit in it. And what I would do is you have two choices. You either get this playoff thing all backloaded and you get it all done by early January. But if you're going to keep doing it the way you're doing it, then you got to go back to one national signing day. It's got to be in February. And that way you can have people finish their jobs. This isn't Kiffin's fault. It's not LSU's fault. It's not Florida's fault. It's not the player's fault. It's the system's fault. The system is failing the sport. It's ridiculous that he's having the most magical season in the history of Ole Miss. There are two verifiable dream jobs out there for him. He can't. Where is his loyalty lie? This got Luke Fickell at Cincinnati. The same damn thing. He felt loyalty to Cincinnati, so he stayed a year. Instead, he could have been the head coach maybe at Notre Dame, maybe at USC. Who knows? Now he's at Wisconsin hanging on for dear life. In order to get something accomplished, sometimes you have to give something up. I don't think it's that much to give up to just say, hey, we're all on a level playing field here. No high school kids can enroll early in class. They can't do it. We'll see them in the summer when they get there, just like it used to be for generations. And that would prevent this from happening.
Bo, did you hear Josh Pate's rant on the college football schedule?
No.
Maybe we can play that coming up at 11:17 or tomorrow and thing or not a thing. But this is pretty good, and you're the first person I thought of when I heard it because you've been banging that drum for the schedule and how bad it was and needed fixed in the calendar for a long time. This is not a thing because what is Lane Kiffin supposed to say on McAfee? He's got his running back right there next to him. Like, what is he supposed to say? And there's no doubt they've said, we want to know. They want some certainty. Now, they may not have said, listen, we got to know by the Egg Bowl or we can't have you as our coach anymore. You're not going to coach. They may not have done that, but they for sure said, hey, we've got to know something sometime soon because we've got a plan with or without you.
If he leaves Ole Miss and they win out, if he leaves, what's stopping all those players from leaving?
Nothing, right?
What? Who's going to coach it? Like, I was being facetious, Houston Nutt. I'm not. That's might not be. Because his staff would go with him. He'd need him to recruit. He'd need him in the portal. Like, damn it, fix this. Adults in the room, fix this. So this isn't the problem.
The Cincinnati Bengals host the New England Patriots Sunday at 1. Cincinnati's going to be without Ja'Marr Chase after being suspended for spitting at Jalen Ramsey last Sunday. He appealed the suspension. It was upheld. According to Ian Rappaport, the argument was made by Chase that he was spitting anyway, and Ramsey just happened to be standing there. Chase reportedly tried to convince the appeals officer he would have spat in Ramsey's face had he been doing it intentionally. Mike Florio of Pro Football Talk says Chase could have argued that there's no precedent for suspending a player who spits on an opponent. Mm-hmm. If you remember, Jalen Carter was ejected from a game one of the season for the Philadelphia Eagles for spitting on Dak Prescott. He was not suspended because the spat happened before any plays were done outside of the kickoff. And so technically he wasn't suspended an extra game. He just kicked out of the game that he was currently in. Thing or not a thing.
I guess good for Jamar. I'm going to say not a thing because they can't win with him. It's a lost season for them. So this probably makes it a little bit easier for them to do what they should probably do at this point anyway, which is shut it all down. So I'm going to say not a thing. But I mean, that's pretty funny to say I was spitting anyway. He just happened to walk into it.
This is not a thing because the Bengals season is over. So whether they win or lose, it really doesn't matter. Losing probably helps them in their draft stock for next year. I do think this is a thing. Just man up to it and say you did it. Or like the other day, you're like, no, I didn't spit. Well, yeah, I spit. I just didn't spit at him. I was spitting regardless. Like, come on, what are we doing?
Just own it a little bit. Nobody wants to take accountability.
I took the cookie, Dad. Sorry.
Sorry. That's it. We'll do a little Hey Guys coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
Starting Monday, it's Rivalry Week. We call it that because the Buckeyes play a very annoying team from Michigan. Clever.
Sponsored by your Central Ohio Toyota dealers.
The Fan.
Back. I trust Atlas Butler because they've been a local company for over 100 years. Not that you should trust everyone just because they're local. Atlas Butler, yes. Guy who sells watches out of his car, maybe not.
Casting from the Lindsay Honda Studios.
Honda makes the cars. Lindsay makes the difference. Visit LindsayHonda.com.
WBNSFM, HD1 Columbus.
Good morning. I'm Eric Reeser. It'll be Senior Day Saturday for number one Ohio State. The Buckeyes are 31.5-point favorites hosting Rutgers for a big noon kick from the shoe. No word on the status of Jeremiah Smith or Carnell Tate. Ryan Day says they don't expect both to be out long term. Hear more from OSU's head coach tomorrow at noon on the Ryan Day radio show. In the NFL, Week 12 begins tomorrow in Houston. The Texans host the Bills at 8:15. No CJ Stroud for Houston as he remains in concussion protocol. Browns quarterback Dylan Gabriel is also in the protocol, and it's likely Shedeur Sanders starts for Cleveland in Las Vegas Sunday at 4:05. In Cincinnati Sunday, the Bengals will host the Patriots without Jamar Chase. The league upheld his one-game suspension for spitting on Steelers corner Jalen Ramsey. In the NHL last night, the Jets beat the Blue Jackets 5-2 in Winnipeg. CBJ 10-8-2 on the season. They'll skate in Toronto tomorrow night at 7. You can hear Blue Jackets Maple Leafs Thursday night right here on The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
Keep your friends close and your producers closer. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
All right, final hour here on a first Friday. Time for a little Hey Guys. Hit it, fellas.
Nothing is off limits. Your participation is required. Just use the hashtag Hey Guys and ask anything you want. Do it now.
Sponsored by High Bank Distillery Co. Dime, drink, distill at High Bank Distillery Co. Learn more at highbankco.com.
And the winner here gets the $50 gift card to our great friends at High Bank. Free distillery tour and tasting for up to 10. Home of the best blended whiskey in America. The best vodka in the world. By the way, something special coming from us and High Bank shortly. You're going to want to keep your eye out for that one. Make your reservation at highbankco.com. Go ahead, guys.
We'll start on Twitter. Alan got a pretty good one to us about an hour ago. Hey, guys, I wouldn't want to live my life over again, but there are times in my past I'd like to revisit. For me, it's 1984. Good times, promising a good future. And he asks, is there a time in your past you'd like to revisit?
I don't know. I mean, I was kind of in at the kind of the end of the glory days of local TV. And I mean, it's pretty crazy. But like in the early 2000s, like when I was in Tallahassee, which was a fun time anyway. I was in my very early 20s, and it was a really, really fun time to be down there and doing local television. The station I was at, the CBS affiliate, was owned by the Phipps family, and they had just, like, as in the Phipps family. And so we had, like, a 7-person sports department. We went to every Super Bowl. We covered every Super Bowl in, like, Market 110. And we'd go cover the Super Bowl. And I do sometimes wish that I would have taken a little bit more time to realize how fortunate I was to go cover all of that stuff and not cover it and covered in a way with like a producers and cameramen and all this stuff. Like, I mean, it was like network television. I was in my early 20s. I didn't know any different, just the way that it was. So I guess just professionally, that one. Personally, there's nothing that I can share on air.
Those are the show tweets or we'll show texts.
Keep that inside the show.
I always think of the Stadium Series last year. I would love to go back and do that again. That was awesome. There are times in my life where I'd like to go back and maybe start my path to what I'm doing now a little sooner, although I don't know if it would be the same. I don't know where I would be. So it's one of those things that I try not to think about. There are some times in the past when I think about like just fun things we did, softball tournaments we did when we traveled or vacations that were really cool that I would like to. And then, of course, I think you'd always like to go back and maybe spend a little more time at the end with loved ones that you lost.
Yeah, for sure.
I think that's a big one. Yeah, the Bishop and Friends After Dark podcast would probably be the best pace for a lot of these stories. I would just say this. I wish I could go back to my freshman year at OU. This isn't going to surprise anybody that's listened to me for however long, but I wasn't very serious as a student. And I'd like to think like maybe that would have been different. Things would be different if I had been. But I'm not this without being that idiot. So thanks, dumb Eric. Man.
Dumb Eric's fun. That's a good time. Dumb Eric at the time.
It was a time, I'll tell you that much. Chris asks on the YouTube chat, hey guys, work's doing a Thanksgiving potluck. What's your go-to item to bring to the mandatory potluck? Says he chose two store-bought apple pies.
Yeah, I'm always, I would bring liquor. I mean, I would bring wine or whiskey or something like that is what I would typically bring. Did he say a work one?
Yeah, the mandatory fun at work.
Oh, it's at work.
But
would still bring liquor.
I'd probably still bring it. I always bring wine or a bottle of liquor, always.
That'd be so tough for a Thanksgiving one because I think there's only so much there. I think like the pie would be the thing. I know normally at a potluck, like my go-to is like some shredded buffalo chicken or like some smokies that are like some maple bacon smokies type thing. Yeah. Those are my normal, and I love meat and cheese trays. So any kind of meat and cheese tray is always a win.
I'll maintain that Giant Eagle has the best bakery cookies. They're these soft pumpkin cookies with orange icing. Now, the orange is like Cleveland Browns. The orange is oranger, so I'm not sure what's exactly in the icing, but that's been my go-to. Because you got a dozen for like $5, and you bring two dozen, and you are all set. Like, nobody can get mad at you for taking maybe some turkey.
Yeah, I think a turkey potluck's pretty wild, I will say. A Thanksgiving potluck's pretty wild.
Jay asks on the YouTube chat, hey guys, what would be more impressive, Jeremiah Smith winning the Heisman as a non-quarterback or him winning three national championships in his 3 years of college football?
The second one. For sure. He's going to win the Heisman. I think he'll either win it this year or next year, like barring, he had an injury now, but I think he's going to win it this year. I think he's going to ball out against Michigan. I think he's going to ball out against Indiana. And there's going to be this aha, eureka moment. Oh, yeah, we already know who the most outstanding player in college football is. And I think he's going to win it this year. So I think that's very easily doable for him. I think the three national championships is borderline impossible in this era. I don't know how you'd ever do that.
Reese J.
I don't think we'll ever see that.
Jay answered his own question in his question because he also continued to say hadn't been done since Minnesota in 34, 35, 36. Like when it hasn't been done in that long, it's the three national championships.
We'll go to Twitter. I just saw one, a fun Browns hypothetical from Eddie.
Okay.
Does Ohio State cover plus 45.5?
Against who?
The Cleveland Browns.
Yes. Yes.
45.5 is a big number. So
they'd
I would say, the Browns are probably going to win by 3 scores at least, but 45.5 is a big number. The Buckeyes would keep it closer than that.
Yeah. Especially the way the Browns are currently playing offense, they just would run Judkins is what they would do. Over and over and over again, and they just block it with the line. But the lines of scrimmage are the problem. Like, can you imagine one of our poor tackles trying to block Myles Garrett?
No.
That's where the problem. It's always in the lines of scrimmage.
Tony asks...
they cover 45.5.
Tony asks on Twitter, hey guys, why don't the networks prevent the NCAA and NFL from encroaching on each other's viewing windows, especially with the NCAA college football playoffs?
Yeah, this is a pretty simple one. It's because the networks have no interest in upsetting the NFL. Because the NFL, if it wants to, can go to Prime or Netflix or directly to ESPN. They can do their own app if they wanted to. That's really what it's about. They do not want to upset the NFL in any way possible, so they just leave it alone. I don't know why they haven't. I think if you ever get to a point where you have a unified front on the college football side of things, you could see that kind of change. Like one television partner, everybody aligned, then I think you could get the calendar right. But as it stands right now, they're just way too disorganized in college athletics to get that done. But it really just comes down to nobody wants to stand up to the NFL on anything.
Yeah, the NFL doesn't care. And if you're a network that has NFL, why do you care? You know, what do you care? Yeah. If even if you do have an agreement with college football, you don't have the college football playoffs. So you're like, screw it. We don't care. We'll steal their viewership.
The other thing that has to kind of just play out the string a little bit is they have agreements with college basketball. Like ESPN, who has the playoff, has agreements with college basketball for that Saturday. I mean, just think of how haphazardly this was all done. To where you're going to have like college basketball games on that Saturday on ESPN, and they're farming out the college football playoff to Turner because they don't have any place to run it because they're contractually obligated to run college basketball. Like, that's what's happening.
I'm guessing ESPN won't make that contract mistake
no.
again.
No.
Troy asks on Twitter, hey guys, will we ever see second round college football playoff games become neutral site or more local when Cleveland, Chicago, Indianapolis, and Minnesota all have domes in place?
Yes. Yeah, you will. And I think you'll see first round games at neutral sites. Like when they get that stadium built up in Cleveland, could I see if the Buckeyes are hosting in the first round that game being played up there under climate control? Yeah, Gene Smith hinted at playing at Indiana. You remember that?
The Hoosier Dome.
Playing in Indianapolis to be in a dome. I mean, you'd be able to football Ferrari. You don't want to have it go driving in the Rockies, man. Like, that's not the point. Like, put it on the fastest, surest track possible. I do think eventually you'll also get to a point where we can get rid of this nonsense with the bowls where we have to acquiesce to them on everything. I think that'll happen too.
See, I don't know. That would be my one drawback on that is, are they going to want to do that to the bowls that they've been so loyal for so long and they've been so loyal too for so long? So if you can do, like, I would think Ohio State right now, their second round game, I believe, and as it's played out, it'd be Notre Dame or Oklahoma. It'd be Ohio State or Oklahoma, Notre Dame in the Rose Bowl. Jeez. Like, are they going to want to do that? Or like, hey, it's closer to play this in Indy. Let's go do it in Indy. See, I don't see them doing that, though.
Well, I think Ohio State would want that.
Maybe
Ohio
so.
Ohio State doesn't want to go to the Rose Bowl to play a quarterfinal?
Maybe so, but are the powers that be going to want to do that?
This sport's so broken.
Especially it's when so you great. Go to a 30-team college football playoff.
The Big Ten has their way.
You'll just need more sites to play these games at, and the stadiums that are opening up will be more than happy to take your money.
The Big Ten is essentially like they're essentially like if somebody had a problem with the economy and the answer was, well, let's just print more cash. That's college athletics. We don't need don't worry about the gold or if it's worth anything. Just print more. Just print more of it. And then we'll all be happy.
Right.
That's college athletics.
How can there be a problem if we just got more?
That's right.
Everybody wants more.
Just print some.
We got to pick a winner.
Was it Alan that made us contemplate our past?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's go with Alan. That was a good one out of him. Congratulations, buddy. You get the $50 gift card to our great friends at High Bank at the free distillery tour and the tasting for up to 10. It's home of the best blended whiskey in America and the best vodka in the world. It's right here in town. Stop by High Bank's 3 locations in Grandview, Gahanna, Westville. Enjoy those award-winning spirits for your next happy hour. Make your reservation at highbankco.com. Drink local. Drink High Bank. We have a new starting quarterback of the Cleveland Browns. Oh, baby. The fuse has been lit. You'll hear the announcement and what to expect coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
To 971thefan.com to listen on demand and subscribe to all our podcasts. Wasting time has never been easier. The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
Getting the cold shoulder?
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Juice is live on YouTube. Weekday mornings starting at 6.
Or on demand whenever you want it.
Yeah, whenever. Bobby Carpenter's at your beck and call.
And Tito's there too, you know, to clean the toilets.
Head to YouTube and subscribe today.
Instant.
I trust Atlas Butler because they've been a local company for over 100 years. Not that you should trust everyone just because they're local. Atlas Butler, yes. Guy who sells watches out of his car, maybe not.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
And weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
A nice mix of sun and clouds as we go into the day on Wednesday, and temperatures a little bit milder as we do get up into the low 50s this afternoon. Mostly cloudy tonight with lows in the 40s, and then for Thursday we'll see more clouds, but also warmth as daytime highs top out in the mid to low 50s. For The Fan, I'm meteorologist Meredith Garfalo with the 10 Weather Impact Forecast.
Hold on to your butts. Rivalry Week is coming.
Sponsored by your Central Ohio Toyota dealers.
Starting on Monday, we get you ready for, you know, The Fan. Sports conversation that's worthy of a toast. Or at least, a stiff drink. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
It's your Uncle Bo here. Get ready to play, win, and celebrate big at Eldorado Siada Downs, your ultimate Caesars Rewards destination. With Caesars Rewards, you're going to earn rewards every time you play, stay, dine, or shop. Not just here, but over 50 Caesars Rewards destinations across the U.S. From unforgettable getaways to incredible culinary experiences, members enjoy exclusive perks and benefits that make every visit worth it. At Siada Downs, the excitement is nonstop. Take your pick for more than 1,700 of the hottest new games. Sip on award-winning craft brews at the Brew Brothers Microbrewery, or dive into Guy Fieri's Trattoria, home of the Out of Bounds 68-layer lasagna, and the energy just keeps building. Siada Downs has been chosen to host the prestigious Breeders' Crown in 2026, featuring 12 championship racings. It's one of the biggest events in harness racing, and it's all coming right here to Columbus. So, come experience the action, the rewards, the unforgettable moments waiting for you at Eldorado Siada Downs, a Caesars Reward destination where the rewards never stop. Must be 21 or older to gamble. Gambling problem, call 1-800-589-9966. Visit caesars.com/Siada Downs for details. We have a new starting quarterback for your Cleveland Browns. Do we have the audio?
So that's where we're getting started. Shador's going to start at quarterback. Dylan is still in the concussion protocol. He is improving. But obviously, we got to put a plan together for all of our players, all of our offense, our defense, our special teams, plan of attack, and give our guys a chance given down. So,
Actually, this part of their plan, and I know this wasn't on purpose because it unfortunately took an injury for Dylan Gabriel to get to this point, and you hate to see that being the case, but I do think it was critical. If you go back to conversations we had this summer, and at the time it was going to be Kenny Pickett, and then it was Kenny Pickett's job. Maybe he could have been the long-time solution. But once they traded Kenny Pickett, and once the season started to get lost a little bit with Joe Flacco, now I not maybe would have kept held on to Joe Flacco a little bit. They didn't. And then they went to Dylan, and now they go to Shador. What I think everybody wanted to see, and I think what they needed to see as an organization, is both Dylan Gabriel and Shador Sanders for long stretches. 4, 5 games, 6 games. I hope now that this start for Shador Sanders on Sunday is the first start of 5 or 6 starts, almost regardless of how he plays. I mean, unless it's just a complete mess, just total. But as long as it's not a complete mess, and I don't think it will be, I think they'll put him in the best possible positions to succeed, and then it's up to him to take advantage of it. But at the same time, like, there needs to be a long runway here. And the good news for them is they still have 7 games left to play. So he's got 7 games to prove to them that they don't need to address a quarterback this offseason. That's the opportunity that's in front of him. And a lot of people have moaned about how it didn't take this long and reps. And we've been over that throughout the week, that a lot of that was either, you know, disingenuous or just not having a clue how the NFL actually works. But he's going to get the full compliment this week, just like any starting quarterback in the NFL would get the full compliment this week. And I think you'll see Tommy Rees put a plan in place that takes advantage of what Shador does well. Now, what exactly is that? Well, we'll get that answer from Sam Monson at 11:30, and he'll have probably a better, clearer picture on what Shador does well, not just from what he did well in what was a bit of a struggle last week in the second half against Baltimore, but also what he did at Colorado that maybe they can take and pull from as they put this game plan together on Sunday.
I think a lot of people coming out of the 2024 college football season would have maybe told you that professionally, Shador had the better upside over Dylan Gabriel.
Yeah.
And so I think there's a lot of talent evaluators that say what Shador offers on the upside's better, or at least more favorable to a lengthy career in the NFL than what Dylan Gabriel offered you. Now, you gave Dylan five games, and while nothing went as planned, nothing really ever goes as planned in the NFL. It's kind of, my opinion has always been, the best coaches know how to deal with that kind of chaos that hits your, you know, front door every single week. But this is that opportunity for Cleveland to now see, with out really any kind of distractions, because Gabriel will be in the concussion protocol. And I know there was some, you know, discussion of when Gabriel comes out, what's his status. Well, his status depends on how Shador plays.
I think that's fair.
That's the situation that every NFL player really finds themselves in. My status is based off of how I play. And for Browns fans, you've now made a game against two 2-8 teams interesting. So this works out pretty well for Cleveland, in my opinion.
This is maybe the best case scenario for the Browns, right? Like, you don't want Dylan to get hurt. You don't want anything there, you know. I guess hurt is different than injured. You don't want him to be injured. You don't want injury to happen to anybody on your team. But you had to look at Shador at some point. Now you get to do it. Hopefully they give Shador some runway here, so he can prove whether he has something or he doesn't. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be interesting to see with this disaster of an offense that Cleveland has put out there and the lack of weapons he has to throw to. The line has been so banged up. It's going to be interesting to see what he does with this opportunity. There are obviously flashes in his game. Mm-hmm. There are things there that you can work with. But there are also some things there that say, yeah, maybe this isn't it. Hopefully they just give him enough rope here so he can show them if he is something or not.
And the Raiders are so bad that I think the Browns defense could put Shador and the offense in pretty good situations.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's probably still going to be some perplexing things that Shador does. There was perplexing things that Dylan did in all five of his starts. He's a rookie quarterback. So you're going to get, I think, a hell of a game. Now, it might be good or it might be yakety sacks football. But again, I go back to, have you made it interesting? Yes.
I think Dylan did about exactly what they asked of him, which was not turn the ball over. He only had the two turnovers. He turned it over twice against New England. That was it. He's actually off to the best start of his time as a starter in the game against Baltimore. He was 7-10, completed 70% of his passes, 7 yards an attempt. He was on pace for his best game as a starter. But this is a couple of things that jumped out to me when I was looking at Dylan. He was sacked 6 times by Pittsburgh and 6 times by the New York Football Jets. Okay. So a total of 18 times in 5+ starts. Dylan's one attribute is the ball gets out quick. Quick. Shador is the opposite of that. So that's the, in a week, how do you devise something? I think they're going to have to move the pocket some. One thing that he struggled with blitz, as you would. It's his first real action, right? Like, so, you know, it's, all of that part is, all of that stuff is good. And he gave you some things. And I just think for them, it's just, there's going to be energy. I mean, this is a 4:05 kick out in Las Vegas.
Yep.
So now all of a sudden, this is going to be a game that a lot of folks are going to have their eye on. It's going to be a shot of adrenaline for the fan base. Why? Well, you know why? Because there's hope. I've been saying since July, Shador Sanders is a lottery ticket. There is no other fifth round pick that I can think of in the history of the league that has this type of attention around him. Tebow was a one. Johnny Manziel was a one. Like, this is a,
This is a unicorn situation.
It really is. There just is no scenario quite like this where you have a known commodity that is a superstar off the field that kind of took college football by storm in terms of became one of the driving forces around it. So to me, all of that stuff leads to this. And this is just such a one of one circumstance that they're in with him. This is the part though that you have to remember. Like, this is a guy from a talent standpoint that most people, the lowest anybody had him as a talent evaluator was 35th overall as a talent evaluator. And I talked to all of them. God knows. Trust me. Nobody had him worse than 35th overall. Nobody thought he'd go lower than second round, but there was something that happened at the combine that flipped it. And it went from here or Cam Ward number one to is he going to be a second round pick to where he falls all the way to five and the whole league passes on him multiple times. So whatever that was, has he made that up in the months that he's been in Cleveland? You're about to find out. I mean, the unknown is fun. The unknown is fun. I'll tell you this. I've seen him throw as many balls as anybody since he's been up there. He made at least one throw every day in camp that you went, oh, he has incredible touch. Guys, his ability to layer the ball over the middle of the field, down the field, is truly special. Like, he can pop it over the linebackers. It'll drop right in right behind him. Like, he's got that in him to do that. And he will take risks downfield. Like, trust me also when I tell you this. Now that's it's good. You know, you do risk reward. There's going to be some that's going to be caught by the other team. Like, that's part of it too. There's a wide margin for error here, but he will throw the ball down the field. There's been multiple times this year where Isaiah Bond has gotten deep and they haven't been able to hook up with it. Shadur, I think, will take those shots.
So you're saying Browns plus four? We do
not saying that.
Okay.
Not saying that. But I do think it's going to be interesting. And now a late window game that otherwise...
That's what we're doing here. We're the interesting business. Yep.
Yeah. If you're a fan of interesting, there's plenty of it. Sam Monson in 2 minutes on how to put this all together. It's coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here.
I trust Atlas Butler because they've been a local company for over 100 years. Not that you should trust everyone just because they're local. Atlas Butler, yes. Guy who sells watches out of his car, maybe not.
Fan Guest Hotline is sponsored by Columbus Worthington Air and Bryant, doing whatever it takes to keep you and your home comfortable. The Fan.
The uncle you never knew you had.
The friends you kind of wish you didn't. This is Bishop and Friends.
Indeed it is. It's time to head on to the Bryant Heating Cooling Systems Fan Guest Hotline. A conversation with good buddy Sam Monson. Check the mic with Steve and Sam, of course, is where you can get it on the podcast side of things. We had booked Sam before we knew that this was definitely going to happen, but in the last 10 minutes it was announced that it will be Shadur Sanders for Cleveland on Sunday at Vegas. Sam, if you were Kevin Stefanski and Tommy Rees, how would you best put Shadur in a position to succeed?
Yeah, I mean, I think... They need to work on his biggest flaw, which has been his biggest flaw as a college prospect as well, which is, you know, get the ball out of his hands. Try and avoid him holding onto the ball so long, taking bad sacks, pocket mismanagement is a problem. And this is some of the stuff that Dillon Gabriel has been very good at coming in. It's just getting rid of the ball as fast as possible. And this is part of the irony and the kind of discourse around Shadur Sanders is that the stuff that's good for Dillon Gabriel is also good for Shadur Sanders. And actually, Sanders brings a bigger play threat. I mean, he already showed in that cameo that he's willing to push the ball down the field more than a guy like Gabriel has shown so far. So, honestly, I don't think they need to change much. They just need to really drill into him. You can't, you know, drop out of the back of the pocket. You need to get the ball in the air as quick as you can.
How difficult is that?
I think it's very difficult because, I mean, that seems to be just part of his game. That's how he plays. That's part of what makes him him. And he was, you know, confusing as a prospect at draft time because we weren't sure how much of that was him and how much of that was Colorado's offensive line, which was terrible, you know. Mm-hmm. So it muddied the waters and it made it a very difficult evaluation. There were games there where I don't think he had a chance. I think at pretty much every play, that offensive line was just hemorrhaging pressure. And at that point, you almost need to throw out
anything you get from a quarterback, because it's not a real scenario. And it doesn't necessarily scale that, you know, a guy behaving that way under pressure when you have an absolute ton of pressure is going to behave the same way when you reduce it down to a normal level. But maybe he won't do that. Maybe this is just one bad cameo performance against Baltimore. We were thrown out there without getting ready. But the fact that he's shown the same thing in preseason and the same thing in the NFL in his brief regular season cameo, at the very minimum, is at least suggesting that this is just a pattern of how he plays the game. And he's not good enough to do that at this level. Very few quarterbacks can survive that way.
Yeah, and I certainly am not comparing the two, but I do remember similar, not at all. I just want to be abundantly clear about that. But I do remember similar conversations around Mahomes coming in. Now, Mahomes has that arm, and Shador's got a nice arm, but not that type of arm. From the Browns, what the Browns do offensively, what they want to do offensively, and what they've done historically under Stefanski, even this year is a little bit different. In the early Stefanski years, a lot of things would look the same, and then you do something else off of it. We've seen less of that this year. And some of that has to do with their weapons on the outside, of which they're pretty limited. Do you anticipate this kind of going back to heavy run play action off of it? Because the one time when he looked relatively comfortable Sunday was in the gun in a 2-minute, which is typically where young quarterbacks are comfortable.
Yeah, it is, because it's the closest thing, you know, they have to replicate the way they operated in college. And yeah, look, it's a difficult balance because, you know, theoretically, a powerful run game and those heavy play action things, those are beneficial to quarterbacks as well, but it isn't what they spent most of their time doing in college. And that is more of a sort of 2-minute shotgun type of approach. So, yeah, look, I think the way that they've modified this offense slightly in the last couple of weeks since Reese took over is they've tried to get the ball in the hands of their playmakers. They've made a sort of concerted effort to get those guys involved early in the game. I think that's a good thing to be doing, you know, players over plays to a degree. And that's an area where I think Shador could be good. Like, give those guys, you know, like Jerry Jeudy, a shot one-on-one on the outside. Attack the intermediate to vertical game to deeper down the field. And then, yeah, if you can take some pressure off them by running the ball, and if that works as well, I think there will be play action opportunities. They just need to really emphasize, you know, don't hesitate, don't second guess it, see it, let it rip, and just put the ball in the air. We'll live with mistakes if those, you know, if those are there. And that's usually an area where he's been good at college. Like, he had a very low rate of making bad mistakes, putting the ball sort of in harm's way. So I think they need to reinforce to him, trust yourself, you're good at this, you make good decisions generally, but that needs to happen. You need to actually trust it and put the ball in the air.
Sam, whether it was Flacco or Dylan or now it'll be Shador, what do you make of what the Browns' plan was going to be offensively this year? And is there an NFL where you can have success trying to just limit risk and run it and keep scores low? It feels like it's a really tough needle to thread.
Yeah, it is. And honestly, I think the thing that nobody really wants to acknowledge is I feel like this season was basically a sacrificial season. I don't think that they ever really thought that they would be particularly competitive this season. I don't think you can run into a season with the quarterback depth chart of Joe Flacco and two mid to low round rookies if you expect that to be the case. I think this team was always set up for next year, for the draft in 2026, you know, multiple first round picks, including your own, which will probably be pretty high. Mm-hmm. I think this is a team that evaluated the quarterback landscape last offseason and said, there is no pathway, you know, to the future quarterback that we want here. Like, there's just no guy that we feel good about as being the quarterback for the next, whatever, 5-10 years. Next year is when we can get that guy. So let's make a trade. Let's get multiple first round picks. Let's position ourselves for that draft. And then let's get some long shots. You know, let's bring in a couple of rookies. And if one of those guys works out, if one of those guys proves us wrong and actually ends up being the next Brock Purdy or whatever, then great. That's a good problem to have. But the chances are they are just sacrificial lambs for next season.
Did you see enough in Dylan Gabriel to know who he is as an NFL player?
I mean, no, in terms of, look, I don't know that you ever know with these guys this early on, but the problem is when you're drafted in the third round beyond, you don't get given more opportunity than that. So unfair as it may be for Dillon Gabriel, I don't think he's done enough to warrant any further investment kind of being put into him or any further time. He looks like somebody that, yeah, maybe with development or maybe if he worked on the weaknesses of his game, he could become a starter down the line. I think he has the arm and the athleticism to make that happen. I think the raw tools are there, but he has the exact opposite problem that Shedeur Sanders has. He was getting the ball out of his hands quickly. He just wasn't being aggressive enough. And, you know, for a guy that doesn't have the investment in him, for a guy that is going to have a limited opportunity, you need to show them upside. You need to show them that there's something potentially special in there for them to even give you that longer look or that longer opportunity. And he hasn't done that so far.
Sounds like if you combine the two, you would have had the number two pick in the draft.
Seriously. I mean, that's what we joked about that on Monday on our show, that they, ironically, they each have the opposite flaw. If you just put them together, that's the quarterback you're looking for.
That's it. If it's not these two for them, and we do have a situation where there could be a Darnold type situation that we had this year, is it Mac Jones? Is it Kyler? If they are going quarterback shopping this offseason and it's not in the draft, and they keep that regime together, who would be a good fit, do you think, for what Kevin really wants to do offensively?
Yeah, the problem with Kyler is I think he is a unique quarterback and you have to design an offense around him. And I don't even know yet if that's possible to get the high end consistent version within any offense. I think that's the reason that the Cardinals might be looking to move on from him. Mm-hmm. Multiple coaches now have tried that and it hasn't quite worked, or they haven't been able to sustain it. And, you know, maybe it can happen. Maybe there's an offense in there a bit like the sort of Russell Wilson Seattle era. Maybe you can get that level of play out of him on a consistent basis, but nobody's struck on the formula yet. And so that, I think, would be massively risky. Mac Jones, you know, I think makes a ton of sense within the Shanahan offense. I don't know how much sense he makes in a variety of other offenses, or you'd certainly be worried given knowing how much of an impact Kyle Shanahan makes on a quarterback. I think you'd be very twitchy about being the next team to take over and hope that it still works. You know, Daniel Jones would be interesting given what's happening in Indianapolis, but I doubt very much if the Colts are going to let him go. Mm-hmm. I think the question is only what type of contract he gets signed to there. So it's going to be a case where it looks like there's quite a lot of veteran options. I don't know how many will actually end up being attractive.
Sam, what is it, and I'll get you out of here on this one, I understand it's a complicated one maybe, or maybe a complicated answer. What is it that McVay, Shanahan, O'Connell do, and we'll see if O'Connell can pull it off with McCarthy, he did it with Darnold. What is it that they do that resuscitates quarterbacks?
I think it's different in each case. Like, remember, McVay resuscitated Jared Goff, but he then lost it. You know, and, mm-hmm. and decided he needed to get rid of Jared Goff. He couldn't win a Super Bowl with Jared Goff. And then they make the aggressive trade for Matthew Stafford, and he sort of becomes the answer to Stafford's problems throughout his career. So I think you kind of need to put a pin in McVay a little bit. Kyle Shanahan, I think, is exceptionally good at consistently evolving that offense, for one. But it's very difficult for teams to stop everything that Shanahan wants to do. He's extremely good at attacking weaknesses within defenses, at getting wide open throws consistently over the middle, using those play action plays. They've modified the run game, so it's not just zone runs now. It's there's a lot of gap schemes in there as well, and it all ties together and looks very similar. So it's very difficult for a defense to try and shut down any one thing, and as soon as you show them a weakness, they'll attack it. And Kevin O'Connell, I think there's a lot of sort of emotional empathy in what Kevin O'Connell does. I think he, as a guy who went through the life as a backup quarterback and sort of seeing, you know, Kevin O'Connell at one point was one of these mid-round guys with a lot of physical tools that people were excited about as someone that could be the quarterback, you know, of an NFL franchise. And it never really happened for him. And I think I think he internalized that and came to a lot of his philosophical thoughts about how the game and the NFL works, and that, you know, this idea that teams fail players before players fail teams. So I think a big part of what he does is a mental approach and trying to rebuild the thought process of these quarterbacks that have been kind of beaten down by the way the NFL works and by their status in the game. I mean, every NFL quarterback that doesn't go straight from elite college player, number one pick, you know, immediate success, have to process the trauma of being basically a bad player for the first time, right? Mm-hmm. Every one of them has been the star player at every level of football they've been through right up until the draft. And then the first time you struggle in the NFL is the first time you struggle basically in your entire football playing career for a lot of these guys. And I think people dismiss how traumatic an experience that is. It's like an MMA fighter losing for the first time. Like, that's right. The first time you ever got just beaten by somebody. And that takes some time to come back from. And I think O'Connell is really good at building these guys back mentally to the point where they can tap back into the traits that were always there.
Sam, thanks for your time and making us smarter today. Appreciate you.
Anytime. Take it easy, guys.
All right, there he goes. Sam Monson, check the mic with Steve and Sam on your podcast front. It's a first Friday. Get you officially endorsed and three things up next. Bishop and Friends are here on The Fan.
I trust Atlas Butler because they've been a local company for over 100 years. Not that you should trust everyone just because they're local. Atlas Butler, yes. Guy who sells watches out of his car, maybe not.
The Daily Ryan Day Show is brought to you locally by your Central Ohio Toyota dealers and by Hyde Park Prime Steakhouse on The Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
This is The Daily Show with Coach Ryan Day, brought to you by Safe Flat Auto Glass. Looking at how the defense played last Saturday, and I know there was a note about only allowing two first downs in the first half. Is that similar from how you talk about offensively, how the success on first down dictates what's going to happen in the later downs on defense?
Well, yeah, it's funny you say that, because in this game, you know, we were expecting Nico to play, but, you know, when he didn't, you know, it sort of changed things a little bit. But going into the week, they had done a nice job of getting the down and distance in their favor of being third and one, two and three. And so, well, we really wanted to win first down, and that's always something that we look at. On Sundays, we look to see who wins first down as a whole, offense and defense. And it's 4 yards. So on defense, if we're holding them for 4 yards, actually less than 4 yards, so then it's a win for the defense. On offense, if it's 4 yards or more, then it's a win for the offense. And that certainly is a situation that's important. All these things are situations add up at the end of the game. And so, we certainly on offense want to make sure that we're getting ourselves in manageable situations and then force the defense in third and long.
Okay, we'll have another comment in just a moment.
Hi, this is Paul Keels. This Buckeye season, don't let a broken windshield ruin your game plan. Safelite Auto Glass makes it easy to get your windshield fixed with their mobile glass shops all over Central Ohio. They can come to you anywhere, giving Buckeye fans more time for game time. OH? Man, I love that. Schedule at safelite.com. Safelite Auto Glass is a proud sponsor of Ohio State Athletics.
Safelite Repair, Safelite Replace.
Buckeye fans, choose chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged for a smoother finish. It's got that crisp, refreshing taste that makes those moments when you choose to rise above the noise and choose chill even better. Coors Light is a proud sponsor of Ohio State Athletics, so crack one open and take a sip. Coors Light, choose chill. Celebrate responsibly. 2025 Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. Beer.
This is the Ohio State Sports Network, presented by the Ohio State Wexner Medical Center, the team physicians for Ohio State Athletics.
In asking about the defense, Ryan, this past weekend we saw Kenyatta Jackson, make a number of disruptive plays. Is this a guy that's continuing to take advantage of his experience?
Yeah, Kenyatta, has been in the program now, and I think, you know, you're really starting to see his confidence build each week, and he's becoming more and more productive. He's gotten into a good rhythm. He's showing leadership. But more than anything, it's on the field, and you're seeing him get his hands on plays. You're seeing him understand how. I think sometimes when you're young and you press and you want to get sacks and things like this, you find yourself almost pressing too much. You know, he's letting the game come to him, and he's a big part of our defense.
Okay, there's the Ohio State Sports Network from Learfield.
For over 37 years, Buckeye Nation has known Hyde Park Prime Steakhouse for serving the best steaks in the city. Our thick-cut, aged steaks are a staple in Columbus, with three locations in Upper Arlington, Dublin, and downtown. And just like the Buckeyes, we strive for excellence and an experience like no other. Hyde Park is proud to introduce the newly added wine room at our downtown Columbus location, where a new elegance in dining surrounds you, creating the ideal setting for any occasion or the perfect night out. Hyde Park is a proud sponsor of Ohio State Athletics. Go Bucks!
Around here, it's all or nothing. And nobody has more all-wheel drive choices than Toyota. Now through December 1st, get 4.75 APR financing on any remaining new 25 RAV4 or RAV4 hybrid. Or lease a new gas-powered RAV4 LE for $289 a month for 39 months with $3,699 due at signing. With approved credit through TFS. Tax, title, and license extra. Call 1-888-36-TOYOTA for details or go to toyota.com. Toyota. Let's go places.
Get eco.
I trust Atlas Butler because they've been a local company for over 100 years. Not that you should trust everyone just because they're local. Atlas Butler, yes. Guy who sells watches out of his car, maybe not.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for over 75 years. The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
First Friday miracles are always better with Uncle Bo. This is Bishop and Friends.
All right, Reese, what end of the poll today?
Daily Fan poll asks, would you want to see LeBron James, Steph Curry, and Kevin Durant play for Team USA during the 2028 Olympics? LeBron's 43, Steph's 40, Durant 39. They will be significantly older at that point. Bo, you are with 75% of the respondents to this Daily Fan poll. Now, it comes from LeBron's podcast, Mind the Game, where they had Curry on, and both of them were asked by Steve Nash if they're going to play in 2028. LeBron said emphatically no. Steph Curry says he hopes to be able to make the to be in physical condition to make the decision, but probably not.
Yeah, I didn't like that Taurasi played the last time and kept like Caitlin Clark out. Like, you've had a bunch of them. We're good. We can move on to the next generation. It's okay. 2028, by the way. My gosh, like LeBron would be close to 50. Steph would be. It's enough. You've had a great run. You've had a magical moment. One of the great Olympic moments, by the way, the last time they played together, that gold medal game against France. Steph was unbelievable. It's a First Friday. Time for your officially endorsed.
Bishop and Friends present First Friday, officially endorsed, because everyone deserves two Fridays.
Sponsored by Hydrate Me Med Spa. Feel better, recover faster, live optimized with Hydrate Me.
We drink for the wrong reasons. My generation, we drink because it's good, because it feels better than unbuttoning your collar, because we deserve it. We drink because it's what men do.
All right, next First Friday is the First Friday of the year, so we'll get you the big recipe on that one. But this is a good one for your Thanksgiving holidays, a very simple one to make and have ready. It's really one of my favorite old fashions I make. You need 2 ounces of your favorite bourbon. You're going to need a half ounce of maple syrup and one small brown sugar cube. Now, what you could do if you don't have the cubes, it's about a half teaspoon of brown sugar. That's about it. So just take a little bit of that bourbon and dribble it in the bottom of the glass and then mash up the sugar and the maple so that's all kind of one thing. Pour in the rest of the bourbon and stir it, hit it with a couple of dashes of black walnut bitters. Stir that around a little bit so that the sugar liquefies and it all combines, and then pour it over a big rock and you are set. It's kind of my Thanksgiving old fashioned one that I make every year on that fine First Friday. So that is your officially endorsed on this First Friday. Time now for three things. Hit it, fellas.
One, two, three things.
Sponsored by Scioto Downs. Your play, your perks, your Caesar's reward spot.
All right, number one for me, it just occurred to me, Buddy Garrity, the 3-year-old golden retriever, I noticed this morning, and I don't know why it took me so long to pick up on it. If I pet him on his head, his snout, around his head or neck in any way, as soon as I'm done petting him, he shakes it off as if like I've put a disease on him or germs. like he's better than me. Like, I can rub his belly all day long, but I pet him on his head, it's a quick shake and like, just get it off me. That's kind of the attitude I'm getting out of it.
Yeah, Odie's not much of a head toucher either.
No.
Like, he wants the affection, but it's mostly on his terms, which is, I guess, most dogs, to be honest. First thing for me, and I posted this at 971BFS, James Franklin was introduced today officially as the head coach of Virginia Tech. And during his press conference, like at least twice, Albert Breer's got the video of someone in the audience just over the top laughing. Like, we're almost into cackling territory.
Like, again, selling it?
I don't know exactly what he's even laughing about, because Franklin talks about recruiting the right people. So I posted at 971BFS, hey guys, what do you think this guy's laughing about? Because it's wild.
He's really having the time of his life, isn't
it's
he?
It's almost in, like, you can't hear Franklin talk because this guy's laughter is just so out there.
Must not have thought Franklin was the right hire, I
Penn
guess.
Penn State fan, maybe crash the presser.
Will James Franklin make the playoff in the next 4 years?
No.
No.
Okay.
First thing for me, this news came down right after the news that Shador was going to start, and actually when we were talking about Shador, Michael Penix has a partial ACL tear, and he's going to undergo surgery to repair that, so his season is over. Man, a season that had a lot of high hopes, I feel like, down in Atlanta has just gone south. Kirk Cousins, if you want another job in the NFL, now's your time to shine.
Yeah, and they're still being compensated as if he is the starter. Number two for me, and this will probably be the last ones, are running out of time a little bit here. I've watched quite a bit more college hoops than I normally do at this time of the year, and it's been pretty dang good. The games last night weren't great, but you can see the talent, and I think this could be kind of a massive year in college hoops. There's a lot of fun teams to watch.
It's the Jacob Reimer effect. He's just slowly infecting every show here on The Fan. Final thing from me, Andrew Siciliano is the voice of the Cleveland Browns and the Browns Radio Network. He says Shador Sanders is going to join Brian Greasy as the only sons of Pro Football Hall of Fame QBs to start an NFL regular season game. Greasy's first win was at the then Oakland Raiders. Siciliano says, by the way, Brian Greasy also faced Pete Carroll in his first year as a starter when the Broncos visited Carroll's Patriots in week 7 of 1999.
Oh, jeez.
Guys, don't go anywhere this afternoon. It is a packed Rothman and Ice show. They've got Adam Schefter coming up at 12:30, the General Bob Carpenter at 1:30, and then a little Hockey and Hounds with Zach Werenski in the 2 o'clock hour.
You have that to look forward to, which is nice. It's your first Friday. Make sure you act accordingly. We're back tomorrow, Bishop and Friends, right here on The Fan.
Monday starts up a pretty big week. Gobble, gobble, and all that crap. Let's focus on what really matters. Rivalry Week.
Sponsored by your Central Ohio Toyota dealers.
The Fan.
Rick Jermaine.
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call